Oh, man. You know, I have to take back everything that I ever said about Vince McMahon's horrible selling. I mean, he was really bad at it. Like, no matter what bump he would take, no matter what move he would take, he was fucking terrible at it. But I do have to take back, yeah, I used to say that he was the worst that I've ever seen. After watching the closing segment of tonight's episode of Dynamite, he's got some stiff competition. I will tell you that. He has some very stiff competition here. You know, 3 years ago. 3 years ago, Tony Khan made a comment, and I tried to find where the quote was from, and it was from Bloomberg News. But Tony Khan made the comment that I'm not going to be an on-screen character on my television show. He goes, that's been done before, you know, on other shows, other promotions. He goes, I'll be referenced. You know, you'll hear my name mentioned. People will know who I am. But I'm not going to be a character on my television show. Well, tonight, Tony Khan became a character, officially, a character on this television show. He was in the main event closing segment of the night with Jack Perry. Okay, we're going to talk about this. But I have to say first, I mean, I'm laughing at it. I'm having a good laugh over the whole thing. I don't hate it. I don't. I actually don't hate it. It was in a way that if you're driving down the road and you see a 17 car pile up and you can't help but just stop your car and look over to see what's going on, to see all the carnage and all the mayhem. That's kind of how I felt watching the end of this show tonight. I couldn't look away, even though I knew it was coming. It was like a slow-moving wreck. I could see that it was coming before Jack Perry even did what he did. But even still, I just had to watch the entire thing to the very end. I was glued to my TV. I was sports entertained, you might say. Now, I don't know if the reaction that they're going for is one of laughter. I don't know if the reaction they're going for is the way that I'm reacting, but I was entertained, and that's all that matters. Look, laughing can be good for the soul, but you look back in wrestling history, you think of the promoters who got involved. I mean, it's a tale as old as time. It is a tale as old as the wrestling business itself. I think back to the Great American Bash in 1996 when the Outsiders beat up Eric Bischoff on stage and Kevin Nash powerbombed him off the stage. I think back to the night in Madison Square Garden that Vince McMahon took his very first Stone Cold Stunner and flopped around like a fish. And now you can add Jack Perry and Tony Khan to that list. Jack Perry punching Tony Khan in the gut with his microphone. And Tony Khan, I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe this here. Tony Khan collapsed. Yeah, you ever see the what happens when you cut the power to those giant inflatable tube men? I'm sure you've seen them. I'm not talking even Bailey. Like, you could be driving down the road and there'll be some sort of car dealership or a car wash or something, right? That's usually where you see them and they're waving around and everything. But have you ever seen what happens when you cut power to the fucking thing? It just is like, it sucks all the oxygen out of it and the thing just collapses in a heap. That was Tony Khan in the middle of the ring tonight at Daly's Place when he got punched in the gut by Jack Perry. It wasn't even so much that he sold it. It was just that he sort of just collapsed. Like, his body lost all of its muscle mass and he just fell to the ground. And then, of course, we had the Elite come out and, well, let me describe the whole angle here, because they built this up throughout the show that Tony Khan and Jack Perry were going to be in the ring together for the closing segment. And they come out, and of course, Jack Perry says, we want to change the world together, reinstate me to AEW. And Tony Khan shakes his hand, and he raises his hand. And again, you could see it coming. And then Jack Perry punches Tony Khan in the gut, and he collapses. The Elite come out. What are you doing? This is not what we planned. Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, they help Tony Khan to his feet. Tony Khan gets back to his feet, showing no ill effects whatsoever. He literally just stands up, like, and he's just standing there. And this all leads to the Young Bucks giving him a Meltzer driver, which I guess they've redubbed the Tony Khan driver, so he got hit by his own move. But they give Tony Khan the... My Robotech guy in the chat says muscle mass. All right, maybe that's a poor description when we're talking about Tony Khan. Maybe we should... Maybe we shouldn't be talking about muscle mass when we're talking about Tony Khan. I mean, he's got to have some muscles in his body, right? He's able to walk. He's able to stand upright. Just go with the flow here, okay? You're interrupting my mojo here. But they give him the Tony Khan driver, and they lay him out, and they played this out like it's a major angle, like a major injury angle. And the referees come out to check on poor Tony Khan. And it is an elite hostile takeover as they leave. And then we see the wrestlers come out from the back. Then we see the wrestlers come out because they weren't concerned enough to help Tony Khan before this. But 5 minutes after this man has been destroyed, here come, you know, all the mid-carders down to the ring to check on Tony Khan, including his father. We actually had Shad Khan making his debut here tonight on Dynamite for the first time. You know, when Shad Khan shows up, you know, shit's getting real. And he had a very concerned look on his face. And you know, the announcers laid out. I mean, to their credit, they tried to play it like this was some sort of serious, oh my God, is Tony Khan okay? Kind of thing as he laid there dead. I have a question, though. I do have one question that struck me as I was watching this. If you're just putting yourself in the mode of kayfabe here. Of all the people on the roster that you could argue legitimately or, again, kayfabe, whatever, would have an issue with Tony Khan and would want to pile drive this man and beat the living shit out of him or would be frustrated with their position in the company or not getting television time or something that's happened to them. Sammy Guevara, for God, the guy's been suspended 3 or 4 different times. I could see Sammy Guevara wanting to come out and beat up Tony Khan. Why would the Young Bucks be so upset with Tony Khan that they would want to give this man a pile driver in the middle of the ring when Tony Khan has bent over backwards at every opportunity to give the Young Bucks and the Elite exactly what they wanted? If there's anybody in the company and on that roster who should be kissing the feet of Tony Khan, it is Matt and Nick Jackson. It is the Elite. So I'm not so sure why they would want to pile drive this man and leave him laying in the middle of the ring. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But here's what I will say. Here's what I will say about this angle here. People talk about story, right? I talk about story too. You want to have story behind these things. You don't want to just have matches and segments just randomly for the sake of doing them, and they don't lead from point A to point B. And that's been one of the biggest criticisms about AEW. Where's the story? I don't see the story. Where's the story? Well, guess what? Dynamite tonight closed with a major story. They closed Dynamite tonight with a major story that they were telling here with the Elite. Now, you don't have to like that story, and the jury is still out on exactly how this story is going to turn out. I, for one, do not need to see Tony Khan taking bumps and becoming a recurring character on this television show. That would be a mistake. Tony Khan, now look, I'm sure Tony is a nice guy, and having AEW around is a great thing. Like, we've talked about this before. It's a fantastic thing. But Tony Khan is the most awkward person that I have ever seen on television in my life. Okay? He's just awkward. And so watching him in an angle like this, the reason I'm laughing is because, again, he's so awkward in this environment, and watching him move around and watching him take bumps, more than anything else, I just find it hilarious. So no, I do not need to see Tony Khan go back on his word from 3 years ago and become a recurring character on a regular basis on this television show when he eventually comes back. Okay, he is not Eric Bischoff, he is not Vince McMahon, he is not Paul Heyman, he is not any of those people. He is not Bill Watts, he is not Dusty Rhodes. You can name any other booker or promoter that you want to. Tony Khan may be a lot of things, he may be a smart guy, he may be a nice guy, but he is not a performer at the level of those people. So please, for the love of God, please keep him off of television going forward. But they told a story tonight, and now we have to wait and see where this story is going to go, how it's going to play out. They brought back Jack Perry. He is now part of the Elite. They are going to try to give Jack Perry a push off of this CM Punk stuff. They are going to try to do something with this man after he sat at home for months on end, not knowing if he was still going to have a job. they shipped him over to Japan for a few months. And so now they're going to try something with him, and that's fine. Is it going to work? I don't know. I don't know. They're going to try, and we're going to see how he does as a top heel in this company. Do I see him breaking out and becoming one of the biggest heels in the business? No, I don't. But that doesn't mean that he can't find success in the role. I've enjoyed Okada as a heel, as part of the Elite. He's part of this whole group, too. You want to push a faction with Okada in it at the top? Fine with me. But there's your story. So now we have to give them time to let this play out and see how good or awful it's going to be. This could turn out to be a complete catastrophe, or it could turn out to be a pretty badass angle, as long as Tony Khan does not have to take any more bumps on TV. That is the one caveat. That is the one caveat that I have about this. Please, let this be it, as far as that goes. That Kenny Omega, they made the announcement tonight that Kenny Omega is going to be back on Dynamite next week. Dynamite is going to be in Winnipeg, which is his hometown. Kenny has been out since December. Kenny is probably going to have surgery soon on his intestines, the whole diverticulitis issue. It sounds like he's going to have to go under the knife. So they're sending him out there on Dynamite next week. This is not meant to be a full-time return for Kenny. Makes me wonder if Kenny is going to be the next victim of the Elite. He's already been fired from the Elite. We might see an angle next week in Winnipeg with him in his hometown. You want to get them super heat. You have them take out Kenny Omega. Better yet, you have Okada, the Continental Champion, take out Kenny Omega. That way, if Omega has to go away for a while, he can go away, he can have his surgery, and when he's ready to come back, now he's got a reason to go after Kazuchika Okada. That's what I'm thinking we may see on Dynamite next week. That would explain why he's going to be on the show. If they just wanted him to make an appearance in front of his fans, he could do that off camera. You know, if he's not ready to come back and wrestle, why else would he be on the show unless they're going to shoot a major angle with him next week? So that's what I mean when I talk about story and letting the whole thing play out. But watching Tony Khan go out there and bump and sell was far more entertaining to me than it had any right to be. And again, we'll see whether or not that ends up being a good thing or a bad thing in the long term. But they were back home tonight in Daly's Place in Jacksonville. Now, they have run dozens of shows there in Jacksonville, right? I mean, the whole pandemic era, they ran shows there in that venue every single week. So I'm a little confused because all I saw on social media tonight and in the chat here before I went live was nonstop complaints about the commentary audio and the backstage audio and just the audio in general for Dynamite all night long. So I'm not sure what was different about the show, because I noticed it too. And I'm not sure what was different about the show that it would have been so awful, but it was very noticeable throughout the entire show. We had a championship celebration on Dynamite tonight with the TBS champion, Willow Nightingale. Okay, they promoted a championship celebration. Willow won the title at Dynasty. And so she was out there tonight. The new AEW world champion, yes, we have a new world champion, he did not have a celebration. In fact, they didn't even put a microphone in his hand tonight. He did wrestle, though. But that was a very curious decision to have a celebration for Willow Nightingale, and they did an angle around it, but to not even put the microphone in Swerve's hand and let him at least say a few words days after he won the world title, that I didn't really understand. I didn't understand that at all. Plus, on the same show, you have the IWGP Championship being defended. Now, in fairness, they announced this already a week ago. But they had on the very same show, they had the IWGP title being defended by Jon Moxley. And so I'm watching this show, and they open the show, as far as in the ring, the first match, Swerve Strickland in an eliminator match against Kyle Fletcher. The main event of the show is Jon Moxley defending the IWGP title against Powerhouse Hobbs. Just in terms of positioning on this show, it's only been 3 days, and it felt to me like Swerve is already being, he's already positioned in the secondary role. I mean, this is the first show coming out of the pay-per-view. And I'm watching this and I thought to myself, I said, you know, this would have been perfect for a segment like what we had with Eddie Guerrero after he won that world title for the very first time. And Eddie was also beloved and people were behind him. Remember when he came out on SmackDown that week after he beat Brock Lesnar and we had a big celebration? I think he came through the crowd. Everybody was so happy, right? That's the sort of thing you should have had for Swerve here on this show. But instead, they had him out there in just kind of a random match wrestling Kyle Fletcher. But Willow Nightingale, man, she got the Chuck E. Cheese celebration here on this show. I just feel like this is a role that is new to Swerve Strickland. And so you want to portray him as the number one guy in this company. And I know he's not part of this elite story, and the elite story is going to take precedent now over everything, given what happened at the end of the show. But I think it's important, given that Swerve has never been in a spot like this before. He's the world champion now for the first time. You want to make sure you portray him not as a secondary champion, because there's so many fucking titles on this show. You want to make sure you portray him as the champion, as the guy on this show. He was not portrayed that way tonight. That cannot happen going forward. Hopefully that was a one-night aberration, and hopefully that will be remedied as we go forward. And unfortunately, it looks like there was a legitimate injury in that IWGP title match, which we will talk about. We also now know who will be challenging Roderick Strong for the international title at Double or Nothing, because we had a first-ever casino gauntlet match. Would have been nice for them to announce this before the show. You know, all the key stuff on the show, or not all of it, but most of the key stuff that actually happened on the show tonight. You know, Will Ospreay was on the show. You never would have known it, though, because they didn't announce it. The segment in the main event with Jack Perry and Tony Khan, all this stuff was unannounced, but I don't know why the gauntlet match wasn't promoted in advance. Even the announcers, like, they're out there on commentary, and they admit, like, oh, we don't know how many people are in this thing. We don't know. Like, they didn't know anything. It's a very chaotic show. Not a bad show. I thought it was actually a good show. I mean, it held my attention. But just a very, very chaotic tonight. This is your AEW Dynamite review for April 24th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster. On a more serious note, I do want to send my condolences to Danhausen and his wife, Lauren, who posted on social media the other day that they recently suffered a miscarriage. She posted that on Instagram, and that is awful. I saw that yesterday. She had posted something, and I think she said she was going to be taking it down and just keeping it up briefly, and she did take it down. But they're obviously, you know, dealing with a lot right now. That's a horrible situation, so I just wanted to make mention of that and just extend my condolences to them and their family. Well, let's get into this Dynamite show here from Daly's Place. The show opened tonight. You see Orange Cassidy there on your screen. Hey, V-Rise, welcome to the channel. It opened with Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy was not in a good way here at the beginning of Dynamite tonight. But before we opened inside of Daly's Place, we were outside of Daly's Place. And on the outside, a car pulled up, a black SUV pulled up, and out came the Elite. Young Bucks with their new tag team titles, and Okada with his Continental title. So as they got out of the car, another black car pulled up behind them, and out from that car came Jack Perry. And they all began to walk into the building. Security immediately stopped Jack Perry and said, "You can't go in, right? You're trespassing." So Matt Jackson stuck up for him and said, "He's with us." And so security let them go, and they continued on into the building. So inside, Orange Cassidy's music hits. No Orange Cassidy. Initially, he doesn't come out. Then we see he gets thrown from the back by somebody, and that somebody is Trent Barretta, who obviously beat this man up, threw him out onto the stage. And he continues to beat down Orange Cassidy down the ramp, the Daly's Place ramp, down to the ring. So Barretta gets in the ring. Orange Cassidy's laying in the ring. And Trent Barretta grabs a microphone. And he tells Chuck Taylor that it is time for him to make his choice. Because he had given him an ultimatum and said, "You got to choose which side you're on, buddy. Who's your friend? So come on out here. Chuck Taylor comes to the ring. He walks slowly to the ring. And Trent Beretta apologizes for not doing this sooner to Orange Cassidy. Instead, he said he spent 5 years hugging this narcissistic prick. And Beretta said Cassidy was supposed to be their mascot, and yet they have ended up becoming lackeys for him, which is true. That is kind of what's happened here. He said Cassidy doesn't care about Chuck. He's not his friend. Beretta says, I'm your friend. And he cares about Chuck, and he tells Chuck to give the people what they want, that he asks for a hug. And Chuck takes a while to contemplate things here. He backs into the corner, and he's thinking about it. And he starts to come in, and then he stops himself, and he says, you know, Trent, I always thought you were a piece of shit. And then he clobbers Trent, knocks him out of the ring. And then he said, you know, the people in the back won't clear me for a match with you here in the ring, but I don't want to fight you in the ring. He says, I want to fight you out in the parking lot. And if you remember, the two of them had that excellent parking lot brawl. It was at Daly's place 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago with Santana and Ortiz, which was an excellent match. And that was the one where at the very end, Trent's mom, Sue, she pulled away in the minivan and she flipped off Proud and Powerful as she pulled away. So Chuck went to check on Orange Cassidy, who was helped to his feet. And Trent Beretta headed to the back. Orange Cassidy, I should point out, was just laying there the entire time. This segment went on for several minutes, and he just laid there. I mean, it must have been one hell of a beating that he took in the back for him to just lay there like this the entire time. Our former international champion here. Hey, low-key lean, thank you for being here, man. He says, thank you for the stream. Hope you're enjoying yourself. I hope you enjoy yourself as much as I sat here and enjoyed myself during that main event segment tonight. So that was the big explanation from Trent Beretta. He had not cut a promo yet explaining why he turned on Orange Cassidy. And so the explanation here is he's tired of playing second fiddle. So again, at least we got an explanation, which is what I was hoping we would get here on this show from Trent Beretta. Here's my problem with this. And maybe this is a me thing. Maybe this is not a you thing, but this is a me thing. My problem with it is this. Best Friends and Dark Order are my two least favorite acts from the original AEW. I never really cared about the Dark Order. I mean, when Brody Lee won the TNT title from Cody, it was such a shocking thing the way it all went down. That was cool. And he was sort of taking it in a different direction. That was interesting to me. Then he had the chain match with Cody, and that ended up being his last match, unfortunately. But the Dark Order at the very beginning and the Dark Order post-Brody, I have never cared about the Dark Order as a group, right? They got some talented people in there, but as a unit, I don't give a fuck about the Dark Order. And likewise, I don't give a fuck about Best Friends. The whole, you know, everyone's best friends and they all do the big hug and everything. I don't give a shit. I just don't. So now that we're having a breakup here, I mean, I'm mildly interested because at least they're breaking up. So we'll see if Trent Beretta ends up better off for it. I don't think he will. I think Trent Beretta, yeah, it's going to be a situation like when Santana came back from his injury. And they actually did a feud. They did a match between Santana and Ortiz, and they relegated it to Rampage. And, you know, Tony Khan didn't really focus on it. It could have been something good, and obviously he didn't give a shit about it. There are people where when they get turned heel or they break away from a team or from a faction, they end up worse off because of it. So I don't see this ending well for Chuck or for Trent. But just because I have not really cared about Best Friends to begin with, I am struggling to care about this. Maybe the eventual match between Trent and Orange Cassidy will be very good because they're both very good. So there's no reason to think the eventual match won't be. But this being the opener, this being the opening segment of that first show coming out of Dynasty, which was such a great show, I thought was very lame. But hey, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor, I'm sure will be a great Rampage main event. I wrote that in my notes before they announced later in the show that the match would be happening on Rampage. I literally wrote, this will make for a great Rampage main event. And at the end of the show, Excalibur said, that will take place on Rampage this week. Now, Rampage, I think, is combined with Collision on Saturday. So it's like one big 3-hour block for those of you who want to tune into it. But that is where they are going to do the parking lot brawl. Now, John Moxley was backstage. And Moxley said that tonight, people should not underestimate his opponent, Powerhouse Hobbs, who looks like a truck and he hits like one, too. Moxley knows what's at stake tonight. All he needs to do is make one mistake and it could all come crashing down for him. He said he knows the Don Callis family put a hit out on his friend, that being Bryan Danielson. He knows what it takes to get the job done. Tonight will suck. That's what he said. Tonight will suck. He said he's going to take a beating, but this is the greatest sport in the world. And tonight he will remind everybody why they will know him from Jacksonville all the way to Tokyo. So again, they promoted an IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match for this show, which honestly should have felt like a much bigger deal than it ended up being. But, you know, as you'll see when I talk about the match later, even with the injury that unfortunately took place during the match, like even before that, this never felt like an IWGP title match. But the opening match on the show, this was an eliminator match, a non-title match between Kyle Fletcher, the reigning Ring of Honor television champion, and the brand new AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Swerve Strickland. Prince Nana is out first to introduce Swerve, who comes out, gets a great reaction from the crowd. Swerve looked great tonight with that belt, by the way. He had these, his gear, it was like gold gear. He had like gold, like forearm pads or whatever it was that he was wearing, but that with the belt around his waist, man, he looked like a champion. I thought he looked great out there with that title around his waist. But the positioning, that's the key here. The positioning that they had for him here on this show left a lot to be desired. It didn't feel to me when this was all over like this guy, this is the guy now, you know, in this company. Like when MJF had the belt, or Kenny Omega had the belt, or John Moxley had the belt, or Jericho had the belt. You knew like they were the guy. They were the top heel or the top babyface in the company. This is only the first night, but they've got to do a better job of positioning him on the show and giving him stuff to do that isn't just him going out there and wrestling random matches. We already have that with Adam Copeland doing his open challenges, going out there as the TNT champion every week. They got to do better with Swerve Strickland. Don Callis joined on commentary because Kyle Fletcher is, of course, part of the Callis family. And both men traded some groundwork early on. Neither man able to gain the upper hand. That led to a stalemate. Strickland floated over a corner charge and caught Fletcher with a leaping thrust. Fletcher answered that by sending Swerve to the floor. But then he wasted no time in arguing with Prince Nana. Instead of taking it out to the ring and focusing on the champion, he's arguing with this guy over here. And Strickland hit a backdrop and then a pump kick off the apron. They went to a break. After the break, Fletcher escaped an arm breaker and Strickland tried to flip out of a move that he executed, but he ate a thrust kick and a Michinoku driver. They cut into, in the middle of this match here, they cut in, they had like a split screen thing to show the Elite in the back arriving, and they were walking into Tony Khan's office. And Jack Perry went in with them. So back to the match here. Fletcher tried a half and half on the apron. Strickland countered into a neck breaker. Swerve delivered a swerve stomp on the edge of the ring, but he came up lame, clutching his ankle. Back inside, Fletcher sank in an ankle lock. Strickland got the ropes. Both men were back up, trading counters. Strickland connected on an upkick, rolling flatliner, and a brainbuster for a near fall. Both men traded tombstone attempts. Fletcher connected on a spinning tombstone for a two count. So Don Callis on commentary, and the announce desk wasn't even like right down at ringside. The announce desk was kind of like, if you remember the Daily's Place setup from before, I think they had the announce desk. It was up on that raised platform that was opposite the hard camera where you saw that little section of the crowd. It was like to the right of the crowd. But from over there, Callis starts to yell, Melbourne. He's yelling Melbourne at Kyle Fletcher. And that was a signal because Kyle Fletcher went to go grab something from underneath the ring. He was supposed to pull out a table. And so he went to go do that. But then he decided against it. And instead, he got back in the ring and Callis said he was supposed to get a table there. Fletcher hit a leaping corner kick. Strickland fought out of the corner, trapped him in the ropes, and hit a swerve stomp with him trapped in the ropes. And Kyle Fletcher kicked out of a swerve stomp. Now, I don't really discriminate between the types of stomps that Swerve does, okay? I know he was in the ropes, and normally when Swerve wins his matches, if he wins with the stomp, the guy's laying on the mat. Who gives a shit? It was a swerve stomp off the top rope, and Kyle Fletcher kicked out. Now, we are 3 days removed, okay, from Swerve Strickland beating Samoa Joe with that very move to win the world championship. And here we have a randomly thrown together eliminator match on this show with Swerve Strickland and Kyle Fletcher, and this fucking guy is kicking out of a swerve stomp. So after that, Strickland hit the house call, flush, and then he got the pin. Then he got the pin. You couldn't just let him win with the stomp, but he got the win. It was a good match. Again, I asked the question, why are we having Kyle Fletcher kick out of the swerve stomp 3 days after he pinned Samoa Joe with that move? That's his signature move. World heavyweight champion. Why is Kyle Fletcher, who can't win a match lately on AEW television to save his life, going out there and kicking out of a swerve stomp? Why are we doing that? That's my question. I don't understand that. Him thinking twice about pulling the table out from under the ring after Callis yelled at him to tell him, you know, Melbourne, that is leading to him either being excommunicated from the Callis family or splitting away on his own from the Callis family. So that is the story that they are telling with this man. He's either going to get dumped or he's going to make the choice to leave on his own. As we saw later in the show, this is a story that's building because there was another segment later on in the back that had Will Ospreay and Callis and Kyle Fletcher was there. We'll get to that. So him being Swerve's opponent didn't really bother me in retrospect, seeing things, because I know that there's a story with him that they're telling. And so they chose to put him in the ring tonight against Swerve in a prominent position. And that spot was the most important spot of the entire match. Him not getting the table is directly playing into the story they're telling with Kyle Fletcher and the Callis family. So at least it wasn't like a waste. Like, why Kyle Fletcher? Why not go with somebody else? That's why. Because there's a story here that they want to tell with him. So that's fine. I understand that. I just think that this being what they had in mind for Swerve on that first Dynamite coming out of that big win at Dynasty, they could have done better. Even if that meant not putting him in the ring in a match and just putting a microphone, give him a live mic, you know, let him get the balloons or the pyro or whatever. You know, Nana could do the dance in the ring. Let him speak from the heart. Let him explain why it's so important, why it means so much for him to be in that position right now with that World Heavyweight Championship. Even if that's all it was, because they're waiting until next week to tell us who his opponent is going to be at Double or Nothing. They didn't say how it's going to be decided. Apparently, it's just decided, and they're going to make the announcement on Wednesday next week in Winnipeg, who his opponent will be at Double or Nothing. So, again, this week, you could have had him just go out there and cut a promo and talk about how this is my house now, and, you know, this is what I have fought for, and you guys stuck with me every step of the way, and I'll never forget you for it, and whatever, you know, let him look directly into the camera and put whoever that person is going to be on notice. This is what you're up against now. I'm not letting this thing go. This thing is going to be stuck to me like glue. You're going to have to kill me if you want to take this championship away from me. That's what I would have preferred instead of him just being in the opening match on this show. And, oh, by the way, we have the real title match, the IWGP title match, coming up later on in the night. I don't know. It didn't feel right to me. Now, backstage, Renee interviewed Thunder Rosa, who said that she's not going to make excuses for her loss to Toni Storm at Dynasty, but she listed all the different things that went wrong for her. Deonna Purrazzo stormed in. They got into a shoving match. Security had to get between them and separate them. Again, the audio here was shit. It was hard to understand exactly what Deonna was saying in certain points. Not that she said much. You know, they ended up fighting, so that's really all you need to know. And that was the end of that. We had Anna Jay one-on-one with Mina Shirakawa of Stardom. Hey, Justin Hesse has been a channel member, part of our GWO here for 3 years. How do you like that? 3 years. Being in the Green World Order here live on the channel. Justin, thank you, sir. One of our OGs. So we had Mina Shirakawa from Stardom, who had Mariah May in her corner, if you don't know why. The two of them used to be partners in Stardom. They were part of a faction called Club Venus. So there's a lot of history there between them. And if you missed it, there was a segment on TV. Was it last week? I think it was last week or the week before, where Mina came out. It might have been the first night that she came out. And she got into the ring and she drank some champagne and then she kissed Mariah May. And everybody got all hot and bothered by it and said, ooh, what's going on here, right? That got people's attention real fast. Yeah, I see you in the chat. Yeah, Mina. So Mina was out here to take on Anna Jay. So Mina hit a dragon screw leg whip, locked Anna in a figure four. She got to the ropes. Shirakawa hit a missile drop kick, followed up with a leaping enziguri. Anna countered out of a move into her Queen Slayer submission hold. Mina countered into a nice pinning predicament for the win. That was pretty much what happened here in this match. Now, after the match was over, Mariah got into the ring with champagne to celebrate Mina's big win. And she got into the ring, and just before the party could start, Anna Jay attacked both women from behind. She knocked the champagne bottle out of Mariah's hand, and there were loud boos for this. These people were not happy about that because, again, they remembered that previous segment. They remembered that segment, and Mina, she kissed Mariah on the lips. They locked lips for a good 3 or 4 seconds. These people were licking their lips. They were getting ready. Okay, all right, here we go. And then Anna Jay fucked the whole thing up. Instant heat. Instant heat here for Anna Jay. That's all they wanted to see. So Anna put Mariah in the Queen Slayer. Tony Storm's music played. She got a big babyface reaction. And Tony came out on stage and she took her heels off and she ran into the ring, chased Anna out of the ring. And then Tony went over to check on Mariah. Then they played Serena Deeb's music. And I never would have known that it was Serena's music. I never would have known it was her music if they didn't put her fucking name up on the screen, because how often is this woman on TV? You could play any music you want to. You could play the fucking SpongeBob SquarePants theme, for all I know. It could be her theme song. So out she walks onto the stage, and she picks up Tony's heels that she left on stage, and she throws them behind her. What she really wants to focus on is the AEW Women's World title that Tony left behind. And so Serena sits down on the steps, on the ramp, right next to the belt. She grabs the belt and holds the belt. And then she motions for the cameraman to come hither. And the cameraman comes in and she speaks directly into the camera. She says, "The next time I touch this belt, I will be the AEW Women's World Champion." Again, you had to really struggle to hear what she was saying here, because I don't know why that it wasn't what she said into the camera wasn't louder, but in any event, Tony against Serena. So how are we feeling about this? I think that could be a very good match. That's obviously being built up for Double or Nothing, I have to assume. Tony Storm defending the championship against Serena Deeb. Again, Thunder Rosa, Serena Deeb. These are not people that are going to take that title away from Tony Storm. Tony Storm is going to lose that championship either to Mariah May or to a returning Jamie Hayter. That's what I think. So these people that they are putting in the ring right now with Tony, these are warm bodies for her to go in there with and have a good match with and beat until the time is right and they pull the trigger on, again, one of those two matches. Maybe it's at Wembley. I don't know if they want to hold off that long, but it could be the Wembley situation where at Wembley Stadium, Toni Storm will lose the championship to one of those two women. I'm still waiting for Jamie Hayter to come back. She's not even back yet. Where's Jamie Hayter? I miss Jamie Hayter. Of all the people right now that are out on the AEW roster, and I love MJF. Jamie Hayter is the one that I'm like, I'm looking at my watch, I'm looking at the calendar, I'm looking at anything that tells time. I'm like, where is this woman? I need this woman back on my television. I want to see her in there with Toni Storm. I want to see her in there with Mercedes. I feel like you put her in the ring with Mercedes, I feel like Mercedes will turn to dust as hard as Jamie Hayter hits, but I would like to see that match too. But again, I have no issue with this. If this is the double or nothing match, I think it'll be very good. But how about that total babyface reaction to Toni Storm coming out? That's the better question to ask. Who's going to be the heel and who's going to be the babyface in that match? Because if the crowd in Jacksonville is any indication, Toni Storm is going to be the babyface going into that match. Now, Mina, not talking about Mina here for a second, Mina Shirakawa, she has a lot of charisma. She's very charismatic, and the fans here in Jacksonville, who I'm guessing the majority of them don't know much about this woman, but she won them over pretty quickly. I mean, they were pretty solidly behind her. It kind of reminded me in a way of Maki Ito. When Maki Ito came in, not that Mina goes out there and flips everybody off and cusses everybody, but how quickly Maki Ito was able to get over and how charismatic she was. And so Mina has that. And they said that she's only been doing this for 5 years. And again, from a small sample here, but from what I saw here, she is good. Didn't take her very long to get over. Stardom is very likely going to have a role in Forbidden Door this year, maybe even CMLL. Because at this point, the whole New Japan versus AEW concept, what do you do at this point? You know, you've already done it for 2 years. And then Tony Khan went out and he signed so many big names away from New Japan that at this point, New Japan versus AEW as a concept feels kind of tired. So I understand him wanting to bring in other promotions, maybe like a Stardom, to have a role in the show this year if he's going to continue to do the show. So I get having Mina on the television shows now because you want to get the audience to be familiar with her if she or the promotion are going to play a role in that show, which is coming up in June. Now, there's also a storyline element to this because at some point, Mariah may have to make a choice depending on how the story plays out. She may have to make a choice. Does she stick with Toni Storm if at some point she has to choose? Or does she go with her old friend, Mina? And could that be what ends up kind of fracturing the relationship between Toni and Mariah and leads to a Toni versus Mariah match? If that's the case, and if I'm right, then it seems pretty clear to me that this is going to factor into that story in some way. You need to have Mina on the show now because you got to get the audience familiar with her and the fact that she and Mariah have history and that they're friends. So that way, if at some point Mariah has to make a decision, you don't just have people watching going, who the fuck is this? I don't know who this woman is. And there's no emotional connection there. It's like, oh, they're telling you she's a friend of Mariah May's, but you've never seen her before, right? So you've got to have her on TV now, establish her. If she gets over, great. But it's not like she's part of the AEW roster, right? She's only going to be here temporarily. But if that's the story they're going to tell, better to get the audience familiar with her now. So that I like. And again, we'll see if Toni and Serena is officially announced for Double or Nothing, or you know, they do it on TV, but that feels like the pay-per-view match to me. Now, speaking of the ladies, that takes us into the next segment here. Fresh off of their party at Chuck E. Cheese, I'm not sure if you saw this on social media, but on Dynasty, on commentary, Stokely Hathaway made a comment after Willow won the TBS title from Julia Hart. He said, "We're going to Chuck E. Cheese." This fucking guy took these women to Chuck E. Cheese. They put pictures up on social media earlier today. It was Stokely Hathaway, Chris Statlander, and Willow Nightingale. They went to a local Chuck E. Cheese, and they had the time of their life. And there's pictures of them at Chuck E. Cheese. I went to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid. I have memories of playing skee ball there. I had a couple of birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese. Of course, I can't have cheese now, but at the time, it was like the best thing in the world. I think they had the ball pits there. It was fucking great. I was kind of jealous watching them have so much fun at Chuck E. Cheese. I wanted to be there with them. So now, Stokely and Statlander are in the ring for the championship celebration. They sang the praises of Willow Nightingale, and then they introduced her, and out came the new TBS champion. Caprice Coleman, for some reason, was on commentary, and he was rapping to Willow's entrance theme. I'm going to guess that's a Ring of Honor thing, but okay, whatever. So Stokely told Willow, you know, I didn't like you initially. And she said, I didn't like you either. Hathaway said that he and Statlander are proud of her. Willow remembered being in the front row here in Daly's Place all those years ago when they were having those pandemic shows, and a lot of people didn't know who she was, but they had to fill up the crowd with wrestlers because there were no people. There were no fans. So she remembered being in the front row, and now here she is today, standing here before all of us as the TBS champion. She says she's not a rookie. She is now the face of TBS. Mercedes Moné interrupted, as she did at Dynasty after Willow won the title and was going to have her moment. They played the CEO theme, and Mercedes danced to the ring and stole this woman's thunder. And so here she comes again, out to the ring. She told Jacksonville to say hello to their CEO, and Willow said, you know, this is like the fourth time that you've interrupted me, so if you have something to say, now would be the time to say it. And Mercedes said, I just came out here to congratulate you. And then she wanted her to enjoy her celebration, she said, because at Double or Nothing, we are looking at the new face of TBS. But the real reason that she's out here, and then Mercedes turned serious, was to ask Willow if she was the bitch who attacked her. That was in that segment a couple of weeks ago where Alex Marvez did that sit-down interview with Mercedes and the lights went out. And they came back on, and Mercedes was laying on the floor. It's a terrible segment, but she wants to know if Willow was the person who attacked her. Willow denied it, and the two of them bickered for a bit. Stokely said, we all know that it was Julia Hart. Of course it wasn't. Willow butted in and asked Mercedes if she has a vendetta against her, because Mercedes thinks that Willow intentionally injured her in their match last year for the New Japan Strong Championship. And Mercedes got upset and asked her if she's blaming her. Am I blaming you? You think I'm blaming you for taking away the one thing that meant more than anything in the world to me? Taking away my career, the thing I loved the most, taking it away from me for an entire year? She says Willow doesn't want the whole truth. She just wants to feel good about herself. Willow said, look, I genuinely feel bad for what happened to you. She said that she wondered that night that she won the title if she could really beat Mercedes, right? Because obviously Mercedes was hobbled. She had a broken ankle when that match ended. And so she asked herself, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I could really beat you. She said that title reign, that New Japan Strong title reign, has an asterisk next to it. But this TBS title has no such asterisk next to it. So at Double or Nothing, she wants Mercedes at 100% to show her that she can beat her and to show her why she is the TBS champion. Mercedes told her, enjoy it while you can, because in your heart, she said, Willow knows that she cannot beat her. Now, Mercedes went to go walk away, and Chris Statlander reached out. And she grabbed Mercedes, grabbed her by the arm. When Mercedes turned around, Chris let go. So she didn't see that it was Statlander. But when Mercedes turned around, she hauled off and she slapped the taste right out of Willow Nightingale's mouth. And then Willow had to be restrained. I thought that Willow was the real star here in this segment. I thought that Willow was very good. Willow is a very good promo. I mean, she had that promo a few weeks ago before Dynasty where she was on stage with Renee and they had their backs turned to the crowd. And she has a knack. She's so likable anyway. She's such a great baby face. But she just has a knack, I feel like, when she fires up. She cuts this great fiery baby face promo and she just knows how to get the people behind her. She's very good at that. And she did that here in this segment. I thought way more than Mercedes. On the mic. She was the real star here. When this was over, I was rooting for Willow to win at Double or Nothing. Like, as a fan, I'm watching this and going, boy, Mercedes is coming out here acting like a real bitch. And I thought, going into this show, who do I want to see walk out as the champion? I want to see Willow Nightingale walk out as the TBS champion, because Mercedes is walking out there. She's interrupting this woman. She's making accusations about her. She's acting like a total heel. Which I think is great, because Mercedes is best as a heel. Mercedes should be a heel. That's what my takeaway here from this is. She should be a heel, and I'm thinking that that's the direction they're going in with her. Now, of course, the idea of her going in there at Double or Nothing and losing to Willow Nightingale is ridiculous because she's the bigger star of the two. She hasn't wrestled a fucking match yet. To send Mercedes out there at Double or Nothing, she's not wrestling a match until May 26. You're going to spend another month hyping this match up. She's already been here for a month and a half. She's been under contract for longer than that, has not wrestled a single match yet. You cannot send her out there in Las Vegas to lose in her first match. That would be ridiculous, especially when you consider the investment that Tony Khan has made in this woman. I'm sure she's getting paid a handsome sum. You cannot send her out there and have her lose in her first match. So that's not going to happen. But Mercedes, again, she just carries herself like a heel. She was at her best in WWE as a heel. And I would prefer to see her as a heel here, too. And you don't have to, like, oh, she's one of the big signings. You can't turn her heel right away. You know what? The thought of Okada coming in as a heel never crossed my mind. And then they turned him heel, and they aligned him with the Elite, and it was the best thing they could have done. Because heel Okada is fucking awesome. And that was the right move to make. And I think it's the right move to make with her as well. Will Ospreay came in. He's a great babyface. Like, he's like your quintessential babyface right now on the men's side. I don't have an issue with her being heel. I think that's the way to go with it. Alex Marvez was outside of Tony Khan's office in the back. And he tried asking the Elite and Jack Perry as they exited Tony Khan's office one by one. Is Perry reinstated? Is Perry reinstated? And they didn't want to have anything to do with him. They said, you know, basically, fuck off. They didn't say that, but they should. I would have said that. Matt Jackson was the last one out. So Matt Jackson said, well, all I can tell you is Tony Khan agreed to meet Jack Perry out there in the ring tonight. And when I heard that, I said, this is going to be either really, really funny or just so fucking terrible that this is going to lead to like a nuclear rant tonight. Because, I mean, again, now you're talking about Tony Khan going out there and he's playing the role of Vince McMahon. He's playing the role of Eric Bischoff. And he's not the greatest actor in the world. So this could go any number of ways. But I was intrigued to see how this segment was going to play out later in the show. But before we got there, we had the first ever casino gauntlet match. We've had casino battle royals. We've had casino ladder matches in this company. Never before have we had a casino gauntlet match, with the winner earning the right to challenge Roderick Strong for the International Championship at Double or Nothing. First pinfall or submission, and the match is over. Again, I don't know why they didn't promote this in advance, but we didn't hear about this until the show went on the air tonight. So it started with Switchblade Jay White and Dante Martin. They fought for a couple of minutes before Penta entered the fray. After a break, Kyle O'Reilly was out next, the man who lost to Roddy at Dynasty. Should have been a hair match. He cut his hair. From Sunday to tonight, he got a haircut. What a waste. You could have had a hair match on Sunday. So anyway, they're all fighting, and now here comes the next man into the fray here, and it is Will Ospreay. Now the people are reacting, because now here we have a big star coming out. They love Will Ospreay, and Ospreay is coming off of, in my opinion, the greatest match in AEW history. Not the greatest match of all time, which is not what I said, but apparently some people can't read. And they have severe eye issues. I hope they see a doctor and get that corrected. But I do think it was the greatest match in AEW history. If you don't think so, that's great. There have been a lot of great matches in AEW history. I got no problem with that. But I think it was the best match that I have seen in the history, in the five-year history of this company. That was a fantastic match. So he comes out here tonight. Heroes welcome. His Jacksonville Daily's Place debut, in-ring debut here for Will Ospreay. He immediately slugs it out with Kyle O'Reilly. Crowd is going wild for him. Dante and Penta, they tried to double-team Ospreay, who met them with a double handspring Pele kick, and Jay White attempted to attack, but Ospreay saw him, and we got a face-off here between Will Ospreay and JY. We got holy shit chants from the crowd because there's history here with these guys going back to New Japan. White faked a handshake and instead he tried to gouge the man's eyes out. Lance Archer was out next. Lance Archer is such a curious case here. It's such a weird thing with him because he comes out there and he's a big, scary looking dude. And the look on Will Ospreay's face was great. I thought he sold this great. He had this just terrified look on his face when he saw that Lance Archer came out. Now, if he would have looked at Cage Match and he would have seen Lance Archer's win-loss record, he would have had a smile on his face and not a terrified look. But he comes out here and he looks like a monster and he goes around and he kills people, right? Everybody dies and he's chokeslamming people and putting them through tables and stuff. But he never wins. So again, how seriously do you really take it when you see him come out because they haven't done anything to protect him? Yeah, when you have a guy that big in a company with not too many guys that are that big, you have Big Bill, you have Satnam Singh, you have big, strong guys like a Hobbs and people like that. But I would say the vast majority of people on this roster, especially like the bigger stars, they're not physically like what I would consider to be big relative to like the big guys that you would find, let's say, on like the WWE roster, you know, like a Drew McIntyre or somebody like that. Yeah, they tend to be on the smaller side and they wrestle that way. So when you have somebody that looks like a Lance Archer, you know, you should treat him a little bit better than they do. So that way, when you have a smaller guy who goes in there and beats him, it would feel like a bigger deal. Because, oh my God, Lance Archer is out here, right? I mean, this guy's on a tear and he's been killing people. This guy can't win a match to save his life. So what does it really mean? But good on Ospreay, at least. He tried here. He tried to sell it. And by the way, he does have a win over Will Ospreay. Years ago in the G1, Lance Archer did beat him once. So anyway, he took out Ospreay immediately with a forearm shot. And Ospreay fell over like a tree. So then he chokeslammed Jay White onto Dante Martin, who was laying on the mat. Then he threw Ospreay out of the ring with his blackout finish, but in doing so, of course, Ospreay did like a flip or a twirl as he got thrown out of the ring, and he wiped out all the other men on the floor. So they went to commercial break, and that allowed Archer to set up a couple of tables outside the ring. Commander was out next. Commander. He did a top rope walk on Archer, who almost got a powerbomb off the apron. Instead, though, Commander turned it into a Hurricanrana, and Lance Archer went flying off the apron, crashing down through the tables down below. Commander and Ospreay, they went a mile a minute back in the ring. Ospreay flipped out of a Jay White Blade Runner attempt into a Liger Bomb for two. Ospreay signaled for Hidden Blade. Jay Lethal's music hit, and he got distracted. Lethal came in. He ran wild. He dropped Penta with a lethal injection. But Jay White was there for a sleeper suplex. Ospreay and Kyle O'Reilly, they had a wild sequence of counters here. Ospreay avoided a rebound lariat into a Hidden Blade. Ospreay was looking for the Tiger Driver 91, and then he stopped. And he stopped because after his match with Danielson at Dynasty, he made the comment in the scrum, and he said that he would retire that move and never use it again. They did the injury angle, and it was an angle, with Bryan Danielson at the end of that match. And he said, because of that, I'm retiring the Tiger Driver 91. You will not see me use it again. So here he almost did it, but then he stopped himself because he remembered. And he didn't use the move. O'Reilly, though, applied the cross arm breaker as Commander flew in with the rope walk shooting star, allowed Ospreay to fire off a Hidden Blade to the back of his head, and he pinned Commander to win the Casino Gauntlet right before the finish. Like, right before the finish, Tony Schiavone on commentary is saying, boy, you know, we could have up to 21 men come out here for this match. And then, boom, the match was over. And not that I'm complaining. I did not need to see 21 men come down to the ring. It was just funny how he mentions that, and then almost instantly the match is over. So Ospreay, Will Ospreay, is going to challenge Roderick Strong for the international title at Double or Nothing. That I was not expecting. I had my sights on Will Ospreay racking up a few more wins before he is in world title contention, which could still happen. but I did not see the international title angle coming here. Roderick Strong made his way to the stage with all the members of the Undisputed Kingdom, including Adam Cole, who can once again walk. I think he's been walking for a while. But he walked on TV for the first time at Dynasty. And because he's appeared on at least one of Kenny Omega's Twitch streams in the last several weeks, and I'm almost positive he was walking around on one of those streams. But now he can officially walk on TV. So Undisputed Kingdom came out. Strong and Ospreay, they had a face-off. They had a little stare down in the ring. Roddy held his belt up in the air. This was chaotic. It was fun. I thought it was fun. You didn't know who was coming out next and what order they were coming out in. I had no idea Will Ospreay was on the show. I assume that's the only reason why Tony Khan didn't announce this in advance is because he wanted, when the music hit, he wanted it to be a big surprise to get that big reaction, but who's going to get a reaction anyway? I just think this is the sort of thing you should have promoted. You should have promoted the fact that you're doing this match, here's what's on the line, and you know, you can mention Will Ospreay is going to be in it as well, or not, but this just kind of came out of nowhere. As far as who wins at Double or Nothing, I don't really see Will Ospreay losing yet, but it's like if he loses, it's not the end of the world if there's a reason for it. Now, we know that he is not long for this world as part of the Callis family. Neither is Kyle Fletcher. Could that potentially play into it? We have 4 weeks to go until Double or Nothing. That story may play out in other ways between now and then that could lead to friction between Callis and Ospreay. Could be a case where Don Callis sends one of his men in there to cost him the match, and then he loses, and that allows Roddy to retain. It just feels too soon. I mean, Roddy just won the belt. You know, he just won it at Revolution. And they needed that win because, again, that faction has been just in shambles ever since Cole, you know, they did the reveal and Cole hasn't been able to work and MJF got hurt. So to take the title off of him would be, I think, for them, for that faction and for Roddy, I think that would be the wrong move. But they may not want to beat Ospreay. So I don't know which direction Tony Khan is going to choose to go in here. You could still do Will Ospreay challenging for the AEW World title at Wembley in August, and you could have champion against champion. You could Swerve as the world champion, Ospreay as the international champion, title for title. Again, that would be a huge main event, I think. But this, to me, feels like maybe that's not the direction for him this year. You know, maybe they want to put the international title on him and let him run with that for a while and do a title change next year, and they're going to give Swerve a longer run with the belt. It just feels to me like Wembley would be a good time to do that match and have Ospreay. You would want Ospreay in that main event. Ospreay has already become one of the top two baby faces in the entire company. It's Ospreay and Swerve. Those are your guys. To not have him in the main event of your Wembley show, of all things, would just feel wrong to me. I think you want him in that spot. Will it be champion against champion? That's the question. But that's, I'll tell you one thing, though. Roddy and Ospreay, it's going to be a hell of a fucking match at Double or Nothing. Sign me up for that match. That I am looking forward to. This week's episode is sponsored by Factor. You know, the weather is starting to get real nice, starting to warm up. That means summer is right around the corner. I want to make sure I'm eating right, but I don't want to do it and not enjoy the food that I'm eating. With Factor meals, I don't need to stress because I know that every meal is ready to eat and never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes flat. The last thing I want to do when I'm hungry is have to wait. Then I get hangry. You don't want to see me when I'm hangry. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Plus more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Why wouldn't you want a chef-prepared meal on the table in 2 minutes? It's like having your own personal chef in your kitchen. That's what you get with Factor's ready-to-eat meals. If you're looking for gourmet options, try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up, so it's no fuss and no mess. They're also tailored to your schedule. You can customize weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. You can pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So be on the lookout for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for Factor's lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/solidmonster50 and use the code solidmonster50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code solidmonster50 at factormeals.com/solidmonster50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Chris Jericho was out next. Everybody is ready to sit under the learning tree. Well, you always sit under the learning tree with me. Every time you tune in every week, you guys are under the learning tree. But now you all get to be under the learning tree with Chris Jericho. Came to the ring with his FTW championship that he won from Hook at Dynasty. And the learning tree thing is like, that's his official nickname now. It's incorporated into his logo and his Tron and on the lower third when they introduce him. So that's his new name. Taz was on commentary. He said that Hook is not medically cleared to travel, but he'll be back soon. Jericho was gloating about winning the FTW belt. He said that the letters FTW now mean, you know, people think of FTW, and what do you think it means? It could be, you know, F the world, or it could be any number of things. He goes, now it means for the world, as in all of the fans, they won this together. Jericho is doing God's work, the God of pro wrestling. So Jericho gives it up to Hook, who just needs to get rid of the dead weight that surrounds him like Taz and Tony Schiavone. Hook forced Jericho, he said. He forced me to hit him with that baseball bat because he should have stayed down. Jericho says, he's talking about people entering the Jericho Vortex, which is his other new thing that he trademarked. We have the learning tree. I find it hard to believe that the learning tree wouldn't have already been trademarked for various purposes, but evidently not. Maybe just in the wrestling realm. I don't know, but he's got the Jericho Vortex, he's got the learning tree, and he says, when you get sucked into the Jericho Vortex, you come out better off for it on the other side. Big Bill's music hits. Talk about random. Here comes Big Bill down to the ring. He said he's been listening to Jericho in the back, and he's only got one thing to say. He says that he needs his guidance. He needs the guidance of the learning tree. Here we go. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Jericho coming out here and forming a heel faction. Everybody knows, he says, that Jericho is the Socrates of professional wrestling. Always willing to give advice and lend a hand and to take a less established talent and take him right to the top with him. Oh, yeah, yeah. That worked out pretty well for Daniel Garcia, didn't it? How'd it work out for him? What's he up to these days? He said, now he knows there's a long line of guys in the back foaming at the mouth for the opportunity to be a part of the learning tree. But Chris, he says, consider this. There is nobody bigger than me and nobody a better fit than me for the learning tree. Jericho said, you know, I'm one of the reasons why Big Bill is in AEW. He goes, that's true. He goes, it's a true story. So he's going to be keeping an eye on Bill to see if what he says here tonight is true. And Bill told Jericho, watch me. This guy's out here doing his best Liv Morgan impression now. Watch me, he says. I hope that wherever he is, I don't know if he was in Jacksonville tonight or not, but I hope that wherever he is, I'm sure he does, Ricky Starks, he's got his bag packed for Stanford. I like to think that Ricky Starks, back at his apartment or wherever he dwells, that it's kind of like a husband if his wife is pregnant and he knows that his wife can pop any day. He's got that bag packed, right? You want to make sure you got that bag packed. You've got whatever you need in there. So that way, when it finally happens, you grab the bag, you head out to the hospital, right? You're always prepared. I like to think that Ricky Starks, he's got a bag packed in the corner somewhere. Maybe it's sitting in the closet. everything he needs is in there. He's got the welcome card for Paul Levesque. He's got whatever else is in that bag. And when he gets the call, when he's free and he finally has the opportunity, he's going to grab his bag and off he goes. Either he's going to go to Stanford, he'll have that meeting, he'll be in Pittsburgh, he'll have his medicals done, he'll be in Orlando, he'll meet with Shawn Michaels. This fucking guy has got to be counting down the days. Go ask Ricky Starks what it's like to be around Chris Jericho. Now he's lost his tag team partner. His tag team partner wants to join with Chris Jericho. I think Big Bill needs to have a little chat with his tag team partner. That's what I think. First, it was the Inner Circle. Then it was the Jericho Appreciation Society. Now it's the Learning Tree. How many times are we going to do this? How many times are we going to, with the same person, go through the same motions over and over and over again? This is what I mean when I talk about Jericho needs to go away. The Learning Tree needs to fall on his head and knock him out for about 6 months or so. And then when he comes to, he can come back to television. I got a great gimmick for Jericho. Maybe the Learning Tree lands on him, right? It bashes him in the head. And Jericho is laying in a coma for 6 months. And when he wakes up, he thinks that he's someone completely different. He has no memory of anything. He has no memory of Fozzie. He has no memory of beating Stone Cold and The Rock in the same night. He has no memory of being the first AEW champion. No memory of any of it. He thinks he's a fucking hockey player or something because his father is a hockey player. And he grew up watching his dad. So now he thinks he's the goon or something. I don't know. Anything would be better than this. The same fucking shit that we've seen before. Same shit, different name. That's all this is. Big Bill is the first. Who else is going to come out now and talk about wanting to sit under the Learning Tree? Who else's growth will be stunted in the vortex of Jericho? Stay tuned to find out. Why must we go through this again? Clout Vampire says, meet Huncho in the chat. Oh, man. Backstage. Let's go backstage. Let's get away from this Learning Tree, please. Can we? Backstage. Chadwick says, Jericho is a goon. This does sound interesting, right? Right? I mean, look. WCW did a pretty awful angle many years ago where Cactus Jack had amnesia. Like, there's a good way to do an angle like that, and there's a very bad way to do an angle like that. I happen to think that that angle with Chris Jericho could be very entertaining. But only if he just completely forgets everything and all this rock and roll bullshit and Fozzie and Judas and everything that has come to identify this man and be synonymous with this man. Just wipe the slate clean. Renee was in the back to interview Will Ospreay, Don Callis, and Kyle Fletcher. Callis congratulated Ospreay, praised him. Callis questioned why Ospreay didn't use the Tiger Driver 91. And Ospreay said, No, bruv. I said after what happened to Daniel at Dynasty, I'm not going to use that move anymore. It's retired. That's it. No more. No more Tiger Driver 91. Bruv. So Kyle Fletcher tried to interject here to speak up on behalf of Ospreay. And Callis cut him off and said Fletcher shouldn't be talking about anything. The last thing he should be talking about is winning matches. And Callis said that Ospreay would give Roderick Strong another broken neck and win his international title. So this ties in with what I said earlier about them telling a story with Fletcher and with the Callis family. That's why Fletcher was chosen to wrestle Swerve here on the show tonight. So at least it served some purpose. He lost again. He went against the advice of his manager. That will play into things. Then we had John Moxley defending the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship here in officially the main event of this show against another member of the Callis family in Powerhouse Hobbs. Green Pianist, I'm sorry. He says, I love you, Solo. Please never do a British accent again. I will not. I will say bruv. I will not do the accent, though. It's not one of my better accents. Don Callis sat in on commentary again. Moxley suplexed Hobbs, who popped right up, hit Moxley with a suplex of his own. They cut to a picture. This was very weird. They cut to a picture-in-picture break in the middle of a Tony Schiavone sentence. He was in the middle of saying something, no warning, right to break. Back from the break, Moxley tried to mount a comeback with a cutter, and he got pounced in midair. So, Moxley is in the corner. Hobbs comes charging in, and he missed a corner charge. Now, I went back and I watched this again. I watched it two more times, because I thought maybe his right knee connected hard on the turnbuckle. He jammed his knee, maybe. There was some kind of impact. Watching it back, the right knee is what it looks like he injured. The right knee did not connect with the turnbuckle. So in watching it back, it may have been a situation where whatever happened to his knee, whatever injury he sustained here because he came up lame, it may have just been that his knee gave out. Hopefully he didn't tear anything, which can happen. I mean, it could happen just by running, right? I mean, guys have done leapfrogs and they've ruptured their Achilles. I mean, it's like the freakiest of things sometimes that leads to the worst injuries. And I don't know how badly he's hurt, but it was pretty clear he rolled out of the ring to the floor. At first, I thought he was selling, and he was clutching his right knee, and I didn't think anything of it. And the referee went out there to talk to him. Moxley went out there as well. But again, Hobbs was grabbing at his right knee and said something to the referee, and the referee did not stop the match. So he must have said that either I'm okay or I'm hurt, let's go to the finish, whatever it was. This definitely felt like they called an audible here, and they went either to a different finish or they went to the finish early. Eventually, Moxley put him back in the ring. Hobbs could not put any weight on the right leg. It was very clear, and he did the punches in the corner to Hobbs, and then he hit a paradigm shift, and Hobbs kicked out, but then Moxley transitioned into the bulldog choke, and Hobbs slowly faded. And the referee called for the stoppage. That gave Jon Moxley the win. He retains the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Doctors immediately jumped in the ring, Doc Samson, to check on Hobbs. And I don't need any report to tell me that that man hurt his leg. I just hope he didn't hurt it seriously, but it didn't look good. And no doubt in my mind, this match was supposed to go a little bit longer. Because even at the end of the show, after the show closing angle, it felt like maybe they were stretching a little bit. So, look, best wishes to Hobbs. I just hope it's nothing too serious that's going to keep him out for a long time or he's going to need surgery for. Could have just been a minor thing, but didn't look very minor. Up until that point, I didn't think the match had no life to it. This is an IWGP World Heavyweight title match. The first time that championship has been defended on television here in this country. On AEW television, on TBS television. And it should have felt like a bigger deal. And it had a very dead crowd for the most part. There wasn't a whole lot to it. And that was before the injury. Then the injury happened and the whole thing just went to hell. So beyond that, I'm not going to judge it because I don't know what else they had planned here. But this did not feel like an IWGP title match. That is for sure. It did not feel like a big deal at all. But what happened when it was over is Konosuke Takeshita, also a member of the Callis family, he walked out on stage and stared down Moxley and did a motion for the IWGP belt, like around his waist, and then he walked to the back. So that was the little tease here for what may be a double or nothing match. Again, you never know with these matches. It could be a TV match. That probably would be a pay-per-view match. Takeshita and Moxley for the IWGP title should not just be a match you throw out there on TV. And frankly, on television, the focus needs to be more on Swerve and not on the IWGP title. I understand it's a big deal that Tony Khan, one of his biggest stars, is holding one of the biggest titles in all of wrestling. And by the way, I severely miss the old IWGP belt. Can I just say that? I actually don't hate this new belt. At first, I did not like it at all. I don't hate it. I can see where people, it would remind them of the old Divas butterfly belt. I don't hate it, but it is nothing compared to the old IWGP belt, and I don't know why they switched away from that design. That was a fucking awesome design, and they never should have gotten away from it. But Moxley against Takeshita is probably the double or nothing match, and should be good. anything with Takeshita, you know, is going to be very good. Even though he's going to lose. Not a fan of that. But Tony Schiavone was in the ring for our final segment of the show. That was the main event in the ring as far as matches go. The actual main event of the show did not have Jon Moxley, the IWGP champion. It did not have Swerve Strickland, the AEW champion. It had Tony Khan. Tony Khan was in the main event of this show. But Tony Schiavone was in the ring, and he introduced Jack Perry in the most sterile way possible. Literally just Jack Perry. No music. He comes out. He's serenaded by chants of Cry Me a River from the crowd. And Perry said, you know, I've had some of the best nights of my life right here in Jacksonville. But tonight, I've got business to handle face-to-face with Tony Khan. So Tony Khan makes his way to the ring, and I'm just sitting here going, how is this going to go? I was genuinely curious how this was going to go here as I saw Tony Khan making his way down to the ring. And Perry said, you know, it's been a long road. Almost 5 years ago, it was the first Double or Nothing. And since then, AEW has changed the world. Perry said it's no secret that he and Tony have not always seen eye to eye, but he promises the only thing he has ever wanted is what is best for AEW. So Perry asked Tony to shake his hand and reinstate him so that they can change the world together. And Tony Khan smiled, and he put his hand out, and he shook Jack Perry's hand, and then he hugged him. Perry smirked at the camera, and then Perry raised Tony Khan's hand, and then he punched Tony Khan in the gut with the microphone, and Tony Khan, the best way I could describe it, is he simply collapsed on the mat. Now, the Elite run out. Matthew, Nicholas, Okada, they tell Perry this wasn't what was supposed to happen. And the Bucks go and they help Tony Khan up. And Tony Khan, not selling this at all, Tony Khan just gets up. And he's standing there. At first, when they were picking him up, they each had him by an arm. And they were teasing that they were going to hit him with the EVP trigger. But then Okada stepped in again. They helped him to his feet. Now Tony is fine. And Tony is standing there. Now I'm thinking, okay, is he going to take a Rainmaker? But no, there was no EVP trigger. There was no Rainmaker. Okada signals up. And Matthew picks up Tony Khan in a tombstone position. Nicholas goes up to the top rope and he leaps off with a flip and they hit Tony Khan with a Tony Khan driver, the old Meltzer driver. And Tony Khan gets drilled down right on his head. Jack Perry goes to the corner. He flips off the crowd. He's cussing the crowd. Matthew, very disingenuously, thanks the crowd for coming out tonight. Referees and doctors, they check on Tony Khan. The Bucks, Okada, and Perry, they all leave together. They head up to the stage. They all raise each other's hands, and they say that it's time to change the world. And after the Elite left and they went to the back, then the wrestlers came out. Now it's okay for all the wrestlers to come out. Maybe we'll come to find out that the Elite warned everybody, until we get back here, you're not allowed to go out there or you're fired. I'm just trying to figure out if the wrestlers were so concerned about Tony Khan, why it took them this long to come out. The man was attacked once, picked back up, attacked a second time, and then it took a while for the Elite to leave, and then they all came out. Very delayed reaction here. But they did not come alone. You never want to come alone. They did not come alone. Shad Khan was out there with them. First time that we've seen Tony's dad, the real money man here in AEW, on television. And he had a very concerned look on his face. And that was the final parting shot. They put the copyright logo up on the screen. And that was the parting image on a very chaotic, very, very weird episode of Dynamite here tonight. As I said at the beginning of the stream, Tony Khan, as an on-air character, should not be on television. Tony Khan, in small doses, is fine, whatever. I am hoping this does not lead to a recurring role for him on TV. I am hoping that this is not a repeat of what Eric Bischoff did in WCW when he got beat up by the NWO, only for us to find out that he was in cahoots with them the entire time. And then we got Eazy-E coming out there every week in the leather jacket, and he became a part of the weekly show. I don't want to see Tony Khan in that role. Tony Khan is not Eric Bischoff. Tony Khan is not Vince McMahon. And you say a lot of horrible things about Vince McMahon, and he'll deserve every single one of them. But the one thing about Vince McMahon was he was the greatest heel in the history of that company. Tony Khan is not that guy. And what he's doing here is he's basically rehashing a bunch of these old angles that we've already seen before. And he's not as good as those people. So for a one-night segment to put heat on Jack Perry and heat on the Elite because Tony Khan is supposed to be some sympathetic figure, fine. Now we wait to see where the angle is going to go. How hot can this angle get? I don't know. We're going to find out. The AEW product right now has not been all that hot. The ratings have not been all that hot. We're going to see what kind of number they pop tonight because they teased the fact that Tony Khan was coming out for that main event segment. What kind of ratings juice does Tony Khan have? We're going to find out. We're going to find out next week if the word of mouth travels around with this angle, if it leads to more interest in the show. They're doing this to generate a buzz. They think they have something big here in this Elite angle with the Elite taking over the company like a hostile takeover of sorts. I don't know if they're going to play it out with like a team AEW versus the Elite thing, and you're going to have a bunch of baby faces sticking up for AEW against the Bucks and Okada. I think that's where Kenny Omega comes into the story. I'm expecting a possible injury angle with him next week to take him out if he's going to be having surgery. They could put more heat on the Elite. The goal right now, if this is the story they've chosen to tell, is to put as much heat on the Elite as possible. This is the story they've chosen. People want to see story in this company. This is now going to be the dominant story in AEW, whether you like it or not. The Elite are taking over. They just beat up the president of the company. They beat up the number one guy, their boss. They left him laying. If they'll do that to Tony Khan, there's no telling what these people are going to do. They may run roughshod on all of AEW every single week. It's like their version of the NWO, which, again, is a terrible comparison because you don't want to be compared to the NWO because the NWO was one of the greatest angles, if not the greatest angle, in the history of the business. Look at how it transformed an entire industry. This can't be that. But can it lead to renewed interest in the AEW product? Can it help get Jack Perry over as a major heel on this roster? They may as well try. All you can do is try. It doesn't mean it's going to work, but they're trying. And that's a good thing. Now there'll be a main story that these shows can be centered around going forward. Where it's going to land, where it's going to lead, I don't know. It was a major angle. My reaction to it was laughter because I just thought, as I'm watching this, I'm just so focused on watching Tony in this segment, I just thought it was fucking ridiculous. But, you know, I know what they were going for. Again, my reaction is not the one they were going for. But now I'm curious what they do next week. So for me, for this viewer, they piqued my interest to see now what the next phase of this story is going to be. Who else can they get involved in this story? Does MJF come back at some point and get involved in this? I'll be honest with you. I mean, this whole Undisputed Kingdom thing has been such a fucking fart the way it's gone over. I would rather when MJF comes back, he just bypasses those guys. And, you know, he becomes part of this anyway. Because he was Mr. AEW before he got hurt and went away. Maybe you can get him involved in this. Swerve is the AEW champion. Why wouldn't he be involved in this? He's the champion of the company. Why wouldn't the Elite target him? What about Will Ospreay? We'll see. There's a number of different directions that this could go in. But I just really hope we don't get Tony Khan back in a few weeks giving someone a low blow. Like, that's my biggest fear in this whole thing. All these people who say, you know, the promoters who don't want to be on TV, they're full of shit. They all want to be on TV. They want to be part of the show. They want to have fun. They're all marks. Everyone's marks. You're a mark. I'm a mark. Everybody's a mark for the right. If you watch wrestling, you're a fucking mark. And the idea that you would be able to go out there and be a part of the show, right? And take bumps and do all this stuff. Like, it's such an alluring thing. I'm surprised it took him this long to go back on his word. But if he feels like by doing this, it's going to help get some guys over, you know, it could be that that's why he finally did it. He's willing to do it. And if it helps get Jack Perry over as a super douchebag heel, maybe in the end it'll be worth it. What is his ceiling? Is Jack Perry's ceiling the world championship? I don't know about that. But I said during my Dynasty review, you know what I can see? I could see Jack Perry going after the TNT title and bringing that into the Elite. Now they have the tag team titles and they have the TNT title. That I can see. I even said Mercedes Moné. She feels like she would be a good fit for the Elite. Especially the whole money tie in there. Big business, the CEO. She would be a good fit for them too. And if she goes out there and wins the TBS title, that's even more gold to bring in. We don't know who this is going to affect and how many more people are going to be brought into this thing here. You don't want to bring in too many people. But this is now going to be the dominant story going forward. And we shall see where it leads. But that image of Tony Khan, man, selling that punch to the gut, that was something. That was something else. Dynamite from Daly's Place gets a 45% thumbs up from you guys tonight. 20.7% thumbs in the middle and 34% thumbs down. Do I genuinely believe that the Elite are going to pull more people to watch? Do I genuinely believe that? I don't. Do I see there being a massive rating spike or a huge influx of lapsed AEW fans or new fans? No. The answer is no, I don't. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't try. Everything that people say about story being such an important part of the weekly show is true. And all you need to do is watch WWE and the success that they've had with the Bloodline angle and all the twists and turns and Sami Zayn's involvement and everything. I mean, that became must-see television there for a while when Sami was involved. I mean, some of those segments with Sami and Roman in the Bloodline were the best WWE television in years. And that Bloodline story, you could argue, went on for too long, and it's still going on, and after a while, it felt like it jumped the shark. But that right there shows you the power of one hot angle, one great story, over an extended period of time, right? A long-term story here, long-term booking, how important that can be. And that is something that AEW has not done a great job of recently. They tell stories, but it's not really a lot of stories people seem to be interested in. Look at the show tonight. Trent Barretta, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, that's a story. I don't give a shit about that story, but it's a story. It's an ongoing story on the show. Mercedes and Willow, right? That's a story. Will Ospreay, the Callis family, the stuff with Kyle Fletcher. There's all kinds of stories playing out. Not everybody is into them, though. So they're banking and hoping that people will want to tune into the show to see what the Elite are going to do next. Oh my God, they beat up Tony Khan, right? Where is this going to go? We can get the ratings in a week from now for next week's show, and the show could be down another 50,000 people, right? And the whole thing could be a fucking waste of time. It doesn't mean that they should not try. They need to be doing this sort of thing. You can't sit here and say, you need to tell stories, and then they tell a story, and you say, well, this is stupid, they shouldn't be doing it. Well, which is it? Do you want them to, or do you not want them to? That's why I'm willing to see where this one goes, but do I honestly believe that it's going to lead to some kind of big spike in overall interest in AEW, this particular story? I don't. I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love to sit here in 2 months and say, boy, you know, that was where the tide began to turn here for Dynamite, and the numbers started to go back up, and boy, you know, even on the streams and everything, I could see the renewed interest in this show. Right? It's all good for business. I would love to sit here and say that. You asking me that question now, if I had to give you an honest answer, I don't. I don't think it's going to make a difference. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't try. They have to. They have no choice. They need to find that one big story that will keep people tuned into their show every single week. And they need to do a better job, and I've said this before, and they didn't do it tonight, but they need to do a better job of utilizing backstage segments. Backstage segments that are, and I don't just mean Renee is in the back to interview somebody. I mean, camera is there, no interviewer, and you have interplay and dialogue between talent in the locker room and the hallway that play into these stories. They don't do enough of that. That's something that WWE actually does very well. And I'm not saying copy it exactly the way they do it, but they don't do it at all here on this show. That's something that I would like to see them do more of. Let me get to your super chats. Let me start with the ones that came in earlier before I went live. Thank you guys, by the way. So far, this has been an incredible stream here. ABK and JM and Daniel Malcolm, all you guys, man. You guys have been fucking crushing it so far here. So thank you for the support. Let's go back here and start. Boy, there's a whole bunch of them here, huh? All right, let's start with Dev to Dust. Dev to Dust says, Tony Khan should blade for the love of the game. You know what? That's about the only thing that's missing. Tony Khan didn't blade. Everybody blades in this company. I think Tony should be a team player. I agree. Tony needs to put that blood capsule in his mouth and bite down on the condom, have it blow up and all the red goo dripping out of his mouth. Let's go back here in this list. There he is. There's Dev to Dust. Actually, there were a couple before his I missed here. Let's go to Crypto and Poker. Who is going to team AEW? Oh shit, Dad Khan is on TV. And Kentucky Dry Chicken says, Papa Bear Khan is pissed. What's the over-under on whether or not we get a Shad Khan promo on the show next week? What do you think? You think Shad Khan will cut a promo? As he twirls his mustache? If he could twirl his mustache, he could tie the Young Bucks down to the train tracks? Sean Nilsson says, Happy Wednesday, Solomonster. Hey, Sean, happy Wednesday to you. Is it still Wednesday? No, it's Thursday. Happy Thursday, Sean. JM with the $100 bomb. JM, you're my man. You the man, JM. Vincent Heartbreak Tucker. Hey, what's going on, Vincent? See Vincent every now and then on Twitter. Any chance Tony Khan turns heel and joins the EWO? At Double or Nothing, the EWO. Oh my God. Is it when you're EWO for life, right? You're EWO for life? Is that what it is? If he starts riding out to the ring on a Harley Davidson, I'm out. Like, I'm out. That's it. The Juliet, Linda McMahon's selling of the tombstone was worse. I don't remember Linda's selling of the tombstone being worse. I don't think she really did anything. She just kind of laid on the ground. I just remember when Kane gave her the tombstone, her head was like... And I don't blame him, you know. It's your boss's wife. You want to protect her, but her head was like 6 inches off the ground. Oz and Glorious. I enjoyed the fuck out of that ending angle. Tony Khan might not sell as well as Vince, but at least he's not in court while his company with his company for sex trafficking. Well, they're not technically in court, the company, but they were named as a defendant, so they may end up in court soon enough. That is true. That is one very big difference between Tony Khan and Vince McMahon. One is accused of sex trafficking, and the other is accused of bad booking. So let's not lose sight of what's important in life here. Let's keep perspective on things. Rizzo with the $9.99. I was intrigued, and I watched the clip. I don't hate it, but my one critique is, why didn't the locker room come out sooner? Could this be setting up MJF's return? Well, I'm guessing no, that when he comes back, it'll be tied into the Undisputed Kingdom, but it's like what I just said. I mean, if this is going to be your dominant angle, you know what? He should come back and say, look, you know, the way I left this place, I carried the flag for this company for over a year. And now I come back and I see what these guys are doing to it. He feels a sense of loyalty to stick up for AEW. I would just ignore, at this point, just ignore the Undisputed Kingdom stuff and just pivot to a different story. It's not worth it. Rodimus Prime, thank you for the $7. Says, that ending to Dynamite, what the hell was that? I died laughing. Just wow. It was great. It was great comedy. JM says, well, Tony Khan announced that the Elite is fired next week and that he has never been more afraid for his life. Tony Khan should not announce anything. Tony Khan should be selling this for the next month. We should not hear from Tony Khan. I don't want to see him tweeting. He should just disappear and sell the injuries. Sell the broken neck. You know, the next time we see him on TV, he may have a neck brace on. He's going to jack Roderick Strong's gimmick. Anderson Blitz, the ending had me laughing. Joseph Olivo, thank you for the $20. Oh God, Tony Khan selling. Jesus, this company went from all Elite Wrestling to all entertainment wrestling. This angle is interesting, though. Shout out to the best podcaster. Shout out to you as well. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, sir. Got some cool stuff coming up soon, but we'll leave that alone. Deontay Soigne with the $5 super chat. I saw Mina and was very happy, obviously. And the, well, I don't blame you. And the whole show was fun. Says Swerve and Ospreay. Funniest shit Tony ever did. I had fun, and that is the point. RB065. You know what can build up muscle mass for Tony Khan? A half-pound roast beef sandwich from Arby's. We got the meat. And possible muscle mass. I did laugh before when I look, all I was saying was when Tony Khan fell down the way that he did, it's as if he it's as if he lost all the muscle mass in his body. And then I saw that one comment in the chat that said muscle mass, what are you talking about? And then I realized my grave mistake. I said, well, you kind of got a point there. One must first have muscle mass in order to lose it. Shikamaru, Tony and his father versus the Young Bucks for the titles at Double or Nothing. Unregistered Hypercam, Tony Khan taking bumps weekly on TV? No, thank you. A weekly YouTube show, though, taking different bumps sounds amazing. AEW Jackass, more or less. I mean, that's basically AEW every week. Don't you see some of the stunts these guys do in the ring? Have you ever seen a Darby Allin match? That's AEW Jackass. Barry MK. I'm shocked that Tony did not hug anyone during the attack. Well, he did. He hugged Jack. And then he got attacked. So he did hug somebody. Griga says, all could have gone bad if a white bag of substance fell off of Tony. Well, you know, nothing fell out of his pocket when that would have been hilarious, though. Oh my God. Fucking like 10 5-hour energies fall out of his pocket when Matt Jackson turned him upside down for the tombstone. ABK, you know, he sent this in 2 hours ago, but my man here deserves another shout.
ABK. Always be killing.
He deserves it. Not only does ABK deserve another shout, I did something very special here for ABK. I was waiting for this exact moment, and ABK is forever enshrined. I want you to take a look at the lower left-hand corner of your screen. ABK, there you go. See, it's like people who carve out their initials in like the bathroom stall and stuff like that. I just carved out ABK's initials in the corner of the screen. He is now officially a part of this street forever. $412 super chat. He was laughing at Tony Khan selling and wondering where the rest of the wrestlers were during the attack. They were probably, you know what I think happened here? I think I know exactly what happened here. I think that all the wrestlers in the back were watching on a monitor and they were pissing themselves laughing. And that's why it took them so long to come out to save Tony Khan. They were pissing with laughter and it took a while for them to contain themselves. And then they came out to try to help out. ABK, thank you. Oz and Gloria, shout out to all the Cornette drones in the chat emotionally melting down over Tony Khan taking a bump on their TVs with no drive-through to provide them comfort. Just call it the ABK Dynamite Review. This is the Dynamite Review sponsored by ABK. See that right there down there, that's the beginning of our Hall of Fame there. ABK is the first inductee. Hey Oz, thank you, man. Hey Esru, thank you for the $5. Eric the Sean, watch Tony Khan book himself winning the Continental Championship at Double or Nothing. Don't give them any ideas. What was Chris Hero's reaction? Chris Hero was watching this in the back. He was like going like this. That was Chris Hero. BW says, Elite did a video on Twitter saying they did what they did to get AEW back on track. Jack said Tony Khan got what was coming to him. It sounds like NWO style. You know, it's one thing to take inspiration from the NWO, but the worst thing they could do is just try to copy the NWO. They need to tread lightly now with where this story goes. Duff's Vids, I watched the last 8 minutes of tonight's show and would love it if it means that we get Shad Khan as temporary booker until Tony Khan is recovered, if not permanent booker. What makes you think that his dad would be a better booker than him? I don't think his dad probably, I mean, I know his dad used to take him to like the old ECW shows. I don't even know how much of a wrestling fan his father was these days. I probably didn't even watch wrestling anymore until his son decided he wanted to start a company. Boots, I think Shad Khan is in cahoots with the Elite. Okay, wait. This is good now. See, now we can have our own little booking session here. I like this. So Boots thinks that Shad Khan is in cahoots with the Elite. And so, that's unbelievable. So, what if the idea is that Shad Khan is so bothered by his son's booking and the dwindling Dynamite ratings, and he thinks his son just has no fucking idea what he's doing, that he put the Elite up to take his own son, his own flesh and blood out, to get him out of the picture. There it is. Oh, the perfect timing of this super chat. He would be the father of the year if he put a hit out on his own son. See, that's an interesting story that I can get behind. He saw the sagging ratings. He saw the online feedback. He couldn't take it anymore. He said, I need you to drop my son on his head. Knock some sense into him. And then we get Shad Khan, evil booker. Here we go. This is what happens. We're booking the territory now. Esru says, me. I'm so awkward, it's embarrassing. Tony Khan, hold my Coke. Hulkster with the 990. See, I told you, now we have an angle. That's right. Now we're talking here. Hulkster, I'll never forget it, dude. Packed house in MSG. Vince comes up to me and says, Solomonster's going over. I told him, that works for me, brother. Solomonster's got star written all over him, dude. He didn't put any Jackson there. I see brother, I see dude. You got to have Brother Jack Dude. You got to at least have one of each. Otherwise, it's not realistic. Arabian Knight, Jey Uso, recently said that he was upset with the WrestleMania match because they cut a lot of their time. Night one WrestleMania had to go an hour, I guess, with 15-minute entrances. I did see the interview that Jey Uso did, and even he realized that that match was not very good. But I disagree that it was a time issue. They got... that match had to get at least 10 minutes, right? I think they had at least 10 minutes for that match. It was less an issue of time and more an issue of... it was just super kick, super kick, super kick, spear, splash, super kick. There's just nothing. There's nothing more to it than that. I think they missed an opportunity when they split the Usos up. Whether it was Jimmy or Jay, one of them should have started incorporating different moves into their arsenal, and they never did that. They never evolved their moveset. They evolved their characters. Jay Uso evolved his character in a major way, but they never evolved their movesets. So they wrestled the exact same way. They only know a certain number of moves, and that's all the match was. So I disagree. It wasn't just a time issue. It was just a bad match. I think that's a cop-out excuse. It wasn't, you know, you could say, well, they got some time cut. That may be true, but the match just was not very good. And I think they could do better. I think that match would have benefited from being like tribal combat or something. And then you get all the weapons and the bells and whistles involved. I think the match would have benefited from that, honestly. Bender McSimpson, I really like the Casino Gauntlet match. Was fun and chaotic. I hope Tony Khan doesn't waste Jay White like he wasted Malakai and Miro. JM with the 5, there is an article under the NFL website's news section covering the Tony Khan angle in a non-kayfabe way, of course. I'll have to check that out. Hey, Bobbert Reviews, thank you for the 40 spot. Seeing the haters' reactions to Solomonster's opinion on Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson is better than Roman versus Rhodes. I can't wait for the next Solomonster controversy, quote unquote, on what he wants for dinner, and they get mad because he didn't pick their favorite food. Yeah, I ordered Chinese and they wanted me to order Italian. By the way, again, this is what I mean when it comes, and I'm not blaming Bobbert for this, but when I talk about people who talk out of their ass and don't really know what they're talking about and misinformation, I don't understand how there are people who were upset with what I said about the Ospreay Danielson match because they thought that I said it was the best match of all time, which I never said. And then you also have people, I saw some people, not a lot, but there were some people who said, you know, hurling all kinds of insults at me just because they thought I said that it was better than Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. I want you, I dare you, okay? I challenge you, I defy you to find me the clip where I said that Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson was better than Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. I never said that. You made it up. It doesn't exist because it didn't happen. Because people want to create controversy, they want to create drama, or again, they're just very dumb. That's also frankly a very good possibility. There are a lot of really stupid fucking people who live in this world and in this community. A lot of dumb fucking people. So that's very possible. But I'm like reading this stuff and I'm saying, is there like an imposter? Is there like a bizarro version of me that I'm unaware of here? Like, when did I say that I thought it was better than Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes? I said Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes was a 5-star match at WrestleMania. I said Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay is the best match in AEW history. I mean, you can infer whatever you want from that. I never compared the two. I never said one was better than the other. Here's why, whatever. I enjoyed them both. Is that a crime? Again, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't get it. But Bobbert, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because I saw a lot of that going around. And wanted to address it, but forgot. So, thank you for reminding me. Chris Manson. Mercedes joining the Elite. I saw her quote tweet the post of them beating up Tony Khan. Well, there you go. There you go. I think it makes sense. I think it makes all... Retro says, next week on Dynamite, footage airs of Salamas praising Ospreay versus Danielson over Roman versus Cody. Yeah. You'll get that black and white grainy security cam footage. Like, there's a camera behind me. As soon as the stream is over, I'm sitting here going, man, that was so much better than WrestleMania. Fuck that match, man. Yeah. Hey, if he thinks it'll help his ratings. Bender McSimpson. Random thought, Anna Jay has improved a lot. I think she's improved. Yeah, I think she's improved. She's improved from where I remember her being. I just don't get to see her wrestle very often, so I don't have a great, you know, pool of examples to draw from here. But I thought the match that she had with Mina tonight was fine. Joseph Brooks with the $9.99. Hey, Solo, can you think of some matches that should have been a program or at least treated bigger than they were? The first match that comes to mind for me is Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels after the Montreal Screwjob. That's a good one. Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. And that was all on Jannetty. You know, Jannetty got fired when they were going to do the match at WrestleMania 8 coming out of the barbershop angle. Didn't work out. So they did it the following year at the Royal Rumble, which was a year too late. And frankly, the match wasn't very good. That was a huge missed opportunity. We never got that big blow-off match from the Rockers. And I think, you know, it would have tore the house down under the right circumstances. So that's another one that I would think of involving Shawn Michaels. Savage and Jake. Macho Man and Jake the Snake is another one. Marquand says, Chris Jericho, man of 1,004 nicknames. Yeah, what will he come up with next? SMC Fee, Salamaster, love the work you're doing, particularly your recap of Dark Side of the Ring. What do you feel is the best episode? From this season? I just watched the Sherry Martel episode this afternoon, and it's very sad, especially at the end. But I thought that one was very good. I enjoyed the John Tenta episode as well. I mean, these are... like that. That's not one of the more controversial ones. But there have been some pretty strong episodes this season. The Sherry Martel one was very good. It's very sad to see her son right now in the state that he's in. He's clearly very sick. So that kind of was very jarring when I first saw him on screen. But I will be reviewing that on the podcast this weekend. But I'm glad you're enjoying them. I mean, I enjoy doing them. And try to do a deep dive on some of them in a way that they can't because they're constrained by the 44 minutes they have. And so it takes a lot of time because there's, you know, a lot of research that's done. But at least you're enjoying it, so that makes me happy. Retro KOH says, what's the over-under on Sammy Guevara returning to join this learning tree garbage? I mean, at this point, I don't know what's up and what's down anymore with this guy. The last time we saw Sammy, they were back together, right? Or were they teasing dissension? I don't even remember at this point. How many times are they going to go back and forth with him and Jericho? I think you just need to cut bait and let him go do something else, you know, within the company, work with other people. Best thing to do would be to get him away from Jericho altogether. Prince Vegeta. The Snowman better stay the fuck off his Twitter to sell his injury. I doubt that it's going to happen. Yeah, I doubt it. EJ Slent, my dad and I are going to the Belmont Stakes in Saratoga, and then we are going to see the Mets and Yankees play. Where in New York City do you recommend us staying? Oh, I don't know. I mean, it depends what your plans are. I mean, you want to go, you know, do things in the city. I mean, I can recommend, you know, Central Park and stuff like that. As far as like a hotel in the city, I don't even spend much time in the city anymore, so I don't really... I wouldn't say there's one hotel that you absolutely need to stay there. Or are you looking to stay outside of the city? I don't know what your plans are. But if you are going to be around the city, it's going to be like 80 degrees early next week. I would check out Central Park. I used to do that on my lunch break. In my suit, I would climb the rocks. There's like this one rock, and I would, in my shoes, I would climb the rock, just praying I didn't slip, because that would be super embarrassing. And just climb to the top of the rock and just stand and look around, and it's just beautiful. Like, you go there and you just, like, it doesn't feel like you're in the middle of New York City. Yeah, it feels like you're completely removed from the city, and it's just a beautiful place. Then you leave the park and you're in the city and it's like, eh. Trill Mexican. So is Osprey the new Superfly? No, bruv. No, that was Bretta. I don't remember my name, Bretta. Where am I, Bretta? No, that's Bretta. This is bruv. No, bruv. Oz and Glorious. When are we all going to just admit that Wardlow and Hobbs are impressive athletes, but boring and one-dimensional in the ring and on the mic? No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that at all, because how can you be sure? How can you say that when we have yet to see them get a sustained push and yet to see them in a story that allows you to see what they can truly bring to the table? When Wardlow cut that promo all those weeks ago, before he lost to Samoa Joe, I thought that was the best promo of his career. He showed more fire and passion in that promo than he did at any other point during his entire run in AEW. That was just one promo, and then he lost. And they haven't done anything with him since. It's the start and stop, and Tony Khan doesn't know how to book Wardlow. He doesn't know how to book Hobbs. He doesn't know how to book any of these big guys. So I don't want to say that they're incapable or they're boring and that they're one-dimensional. They may come across that way in AEW. I personally don't believe that that's how they are, and I think if they were given the chance, they could show a lot more than they have. I don't put all the blame on them for that. The blame is also on Tony Khan, because Tony Khan doesn't know how to fucking use these guys. That's the problem. I don't want to take it out on those guys. I think those guys are capable of a lot more. They're just not given the opportunity to show it. And you can't put that all on them. Daniel Malcolm, $69 super chat. Gotta know, what was going through your mind when you were creating this super chat? Shout out to Abu Sika, hashtag Bukkake Wednesdays. Hashtag climaxes posthumously. I actually had a lot of fun coming up with that one. I kind of had a germ of an idea in my head. My mind works in weird ways, and it just kind of goes from there. Like, once I commit to it, I need to finish. Once I commit to it, I need to, well. All right, let's move on. Daniel, thank you. Dylan Hensley, $5 super chat. Bad news. The power went out at the AAPW arena last Saturday, so my title match was canceled. Still unsure if my title match is back on this weekend. Well, who cut the power? Obviously, somebody is jealous of the fact that you were going to have a title match, and they cut the power to screw you out of your championship match. Now you need to figure out who the culprit was. See, now you have a story. This is what I mean, the importance of story in wrestling. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you get your title match soon, though. Keep us posted. Alexander Fitzgerald and El Prezcat coming in with a couple of super chats. El Prezcat says, who trains Tony for his 7-star match? I'm sure he'll be on the phone with Meltzer. Dave will give him some tips. Dave will tell him what to do. And Alexander says, the NFL is covering Tony Khan getting beaten up by the Elite. I think that's huge and can get some new eyes on the show. Well, we'll see. I mean, again, that's why they did the angle. They're looking to generate buzz. How effective it was, we'll find out in the next few weeks. Tony Khan himself. You don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to Tony Khan. He himself explained the importance and the significance of the ratings. In his own words, it is the single most important metric when it comes to measuring the success of his television show and how happy Warner Brothers Discovery is. So for all the people saying, why do people talk about the ratings? The ratings don't mean anything anymore. It's antiquated. It's this, it's that. This is the owner and the president of the company saying that it is the single most important metric that he looks at. So that's why they do this stuff. They're trying to generate a buzz. They're trying to get a spike in their numbers because they're in this negotiating window right now with Warner Brothers Discovery, and they want to bring the numbers up. They want to bring as many people into the show, get as many eyeballs on the show as possible at a time when they are negotiating what is going to be the most important deal that he has negotiated ever in the history of this company. This deal could make or break AEW going forward. And so he's trying to come up with stuff and doing everything in his power to secure the best possible rights renewal that he can get. And in his own words, the ratings are the number one metric for that. So if he can get more people to tune in out of curiosity, because they're going to see a story that the owner got beaten up by a bunch of wrestlers, then it would be a success. But it's way too early to say whether or not this is a success or not. I know why they're doing it, though. I understand why it's happening. Kentucky Dried Chicken without flavor. If the EVP Bucks told me to stay in the back, well, I'm going to get myself fired in style by being define, passing gas, and squeak. What? You're a weird guy, you know that? You're very strange. Prince Vegeta, Jack Perry ceiling equals 24/7 title. Kentucky Dried Chicken says, you're right, Solomonster. AEW do tell stories. AEW needs more flavor in their stories. AEW Creative needs to watch some Star Wars, X-Men, Batman, Friday, Goodfellas, and more movies for inspiration. Well, apparently from tonight, all they need to do is watch 1996 WCW. Abu Sika with the $2. Always like that Daniel Malcolm lad. Abu Sika is dropping a super chat, and he's letting somebody else drop his own super chat. That feels wrong. Barry MK, Linda sold the tombstone just fine. She just laid there. What more is needed? That's what I said. I mean, what did you expect the woman to do? Like, she's not going to flop around like Vince. I don't know what you expected this woman to do other than just lay there. That's how you sell it. She's unconscious. She sells it like she's dead. The Mount Vernon kid said, my brother Hulkling 93 and I could not stop laughing. Tony Khan looked like he got shot. That, you know what? That's exactly what it looked like. He looked like Oswald was up in the rafters or something, and he fired the shot, and down goes Tony Khan. Who knew that Oswald was at Daly's place the entire time? The Data and Boys podcast. Does anyone take the 5'8" Bucks and Perry seriously? I guess we'll find out. If the angle is a success, then a lot of people take them seriously. And if it's not, then they don't. Oofman Entertainment. So will a $413 super chat get more initials on the screens? No, you'll get your initials. Yeah, I mean, we could work something out. I mean, there's only so much real estate here on the screen, but yes, we can work something out. El Prez Cap, buy or sell Tony Gut Punch or Vince's first stunner? Vince's first stunner. Vince's first stunner is going to live in infamy. It's just one of those moments that you never forget. It's just hilariously awful. It's like someone literally took a stun gun and shoved it up his ass. I still can't explain it. Kentucky Dried Chicken, Tony Khan versus Jack Perry in a Las Vegas death match. No, we don't need that. Barry says, I also just finished watching all of the Booker and Kurt Angle stuff from 2005. Must have been awkward for them to team together in TNA years later. No, I would say it was probably more awkward for Kurt Angle to be lusting over the man's wife and saying he wants to have hot bestiality sex with her. I would think that would probably be the weirder of the parts of that angle. Forza Ferrari 90. Tony Khan is either on coke all the time or has some severe social anxiety. I just think he's socially awkward. And there's a lot of people out there who are like that too. They're just not on television. But he's just a very, I think he's just a socially awkward guy. Kentucky Fried Chicken, Vince McMahon takes a bump. Eric Bischoff takes a bump. Dixie Carter takes a bump. Billy Corgan takes a bump. Tonight, Tony Khan finally takes a bump. That's right. Tony Khan was officially initiated into the club, the bump club. Like I said, every promoter, booker, at some point, like it's their dream. They don't need to admit it. They all want to at some point. They all want to take a bump. See, as the commissioner, though, people know better. They don't lay their hands on me. Slinko. Love the podcast. Always listen at work. Hey, Slinko, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy them. Michael Darcy, how would you feel if Tony Khan shows up to the draft tomorrow with a neck brace? I think that would be fucking great. I think he should. I think Tony Khan should keep kayfabe and should show up to the draft with a neck brace on. Mark Kwan, we need a Dark Side of the Ring collection of just Solomonster's reaction to eyeball stories. I swear, if I hear one more eyeball story. Caleb Jester, I hope Tony at the NFL draft with a neck brace. Yes, I think he should. No cap. Happy for Swerve and Ospreay. Tony Khan is the problem with the weekly shows. It doesn't matter. He will not make a change. Chris Mikesell with the 999. Hey, Solo, if you can, I wanted to know your memories of the Mets. Were you old enough to remember when they won the World Series? What about the Subway Series? Were you mad when the Yankees won that year? I was not happy. I don't know if I would say I was mad. I was disappointed. I was at game two. I think it was game two of the 2006 division series. That was brutal. I was at the stadium for that. That was the only playoff game I ever attended. And that was a very, like, that subway ride back into the city was eerie. It was so quiet. It was like someone died. Everybody just sat there quiet. Nobody was talking. Nobody was saying anything. It was like, it was unlike anything I had ever seen before on a subway. As far as like as a kid, I don't remember the 86 series. I have a yearbook from 1987. And I have some vague memories of those early games, but nothing specific. From like a specific game from when I was that young. So, but I, you know, look, Gary Carter was one of my favorites. Daryl Strawberry. Gary Carter was probably my favorite back then. And they used to make these MLB figures. I don't remember the company that made them, and I don't have them anymore. I wish I still had them. But I had like a Gary Carter figure, and there was a Daryl Strawberry figure. There may have been a Keith Hernandez one. So that, I remember having that as a kid. We've got Rican Son, just got home from Dynamite. Me and my mom's first event since WrestleMania 25. Gauntlet match was the only shit match of the night. Good night. Oh, I completely misread that. I thought he said that was the only shit match of the night. He said, was the holy shit match of the night. That's a very different thing than what I thought he said. Rican Son, thank you, man. Thank you for the love. For trying to get that sign in. I appreciate it. Oz and Glorious, the old WCW kid here, wants Eazy-E to manage the EWO. I don't think that Tony Khan is going to be bringing Eric Bischoff, of all people, back to AEW anytime soon. And Woody Allen's right-hand man with the $6. Would you ever review the Hitman Brett, his drink, but be careful because it's only a matter of time before the Hitman gets a hold on you. He was sponsoring some kind of a drink. Oh, that's right. Was it like a whiskey or something? I don't even know where they sell it. I have to look into that. I completely forgot about that. I think they announced it, and then I don't know that it ever came out. So I will look into that. I would try it. If I can get my hands on it, I would try it. So we'll see. See how that goes. Well, thank you for the super chat love tonight. You guys are awesome. The goal tonight for Be the Booker was 400. And we are already sitting at 662. You smash that goal. So let us go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
There it is. Greatest match you will ever see in AEW history. Tag team, be the booker. Let's kick things off here. Let's pick a good one. I want to pick a good one here. We begin with the Natural Disasters, the former WWF Tag Team Champions. We landed on them a few weeks ago, didn't we? Earthquake and Typhoon. Look how happy they are. Look how happy Typhoon is. He's just glad he got booked. Typhoon and Earthquake getting into the ring. One-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. Taking on Billy and Chuck. Garbage. What kind of fucking garbage match is that? What are we doing here? Connor, don't start with me. The greatest match of all time, you say? Connor? Don't play with me, Connor. Don't do it. All right, women's Be the Booker. Yeah, that match was just fucking garbage. We could do better than that. We begin with, well, there you go. Willow Nightingale, the reigning TBS champion. Willow Nightingale. How could you not be happy and in a good mood when you see Willow Nightingale? She's always so happy. TBS champion. Maybe we could land on Mercedes. What do you think? Willow Nightingale going to go one-on-one with Ivory. Ivory, Gina Moretti, right? All the way back to the Glow days. Ivory was a very good wrestler. Ivory was a good wrestler. The gimmick here, the right to censor gimmick, not so much. Not a fan of that. But I think Willow and Ivory would have had a kick-ass match. All right. One buzzer, one bell comes down to the tiebreaker here, as it does so often here on these streams. Men's Be the Booker. Take it for a spin. We land on the former AEW World Champion, Samoa Joe. Always looks pissed off. It doesn't matter what photo you see him in. He looks like he's about to rip your head off and shit down your neck. Samoa Joe. Very upset that he lost his world title. Who is he facing? Be the Booker main event here for April 24th, or whatever date it is now, 25th. It is technically the 25th. It will be Samoa Joe. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Look who it is. It is Sting. Oh, poor Sting. Poor Sting. It looks like Sting went down on a woman during her time of the month. Anyway, look, Sting and Samoa Joe. Did I say that? I did. Sting and Samoa Joe would be a great match. Sting needs to wipe his chin off there a little bit. See, that's what happens when you dive off the ladder and you undershoot your target. Unfortunately, you go face first into the table. Sting and Samoa Joe. Well, at least we ended well with that main event. Two out of three ain't bad, man. Two out of three ain't bad. What a photo, huh? What a photo. Hey, Sting was a ladies' man back in the day. I'm sure Sting had his share of women on the road. probably had one in every city. And I would not at all be surprised if he looked like that a few times, but good for him. You know, look, he was a young man. He was out there doing his thing, world champion. Ride that wave, man. Ride that wave. Friday night is the beginning of the WWE draft, and I have some news. We're not done yet. We got to talk about the draft here, because the draft, Solomonster in rare form tonight, man. I don't know what it is. I don't know, man. Maybe it was that Bret Hart drink. Maybe that's what I was drinking before. I don't know. We got some exciting things coming up here in these next few weeks here. Things I can't even talk about, but we got so much going on here. But what I want to talk about right now is the WWE draft, because they released some rules of the draft. I was wondering what the rules were going to be. And here are the rules for the draft, so everybody is up to speed on this. On SmackDown, night one of the draft is coming up on Friday. On SmackDown, there will be four rounds with 16 total picks, 8 for SmackDown and 8 for Raw. On Raw Monday night, there will be 6 rounds with 24 total picks, so it'll be 12 for Raw and 12 for SmackDown. Champions on each brand have draft immunity. They are protected. That's exactly what I pitched going into this. I was very happy to read that. I think that makes sense. That's exactly what I would do. Champions should stay where they are, especially the Raw champions, since most of the belts look the same. It wouldn't have made any sense at all to swap champions back and forth. You make all the belts look, almost all the belts look the same. For what? Right? For brand consistency, then they need to stay on the brand where they belong. Now, they did not say anything about NXT. Interestingly enough. So they said champions are protected. They insinuated Raw and SmackDown. That may not include NXT. The women's tag team champions are eligible to be selected. That's Asuka and Kairi Sane. They are able to appear on both brands, but will be assigned to the brand that they were drafted to if they lose the titles. SmackDown will pick first this Friday, and then Raw will pick first next Monday. And then the rosters will lock as of the Monday after Backlash. So that is Monday, May 6th, is when the rosters will officially, the new changes will take effect. So the champions being protected means that Cody, Bayley, Logan Paul, Grayson Waller, Austin Theory are all going to be on SmackDown. Damian Priest, Becky Lynch, Sami Zayn, and The Miz and R-Truth will remain on Monday Night Raw. And they're not doing this, but I wish they would, because this also is something I've talked about. I feel like people like Bron Breakker, Jade Cargill, maybe even Sheamus, but more so Bron Breakker and Jade Cargill, they made such a big deal about the fact that Nick Aldis, he worked so hard and negotiated with them and he signed them. And even with Bron, he came out on TV with the contract, they posed with it, they took pictures. Bron Breakker is in the draft pool, I think, on Friday. Jade is in the draft pool on Monday. So it's like, well, what the hell was the point of building it up so much? And like, oh, Nick Aldis, he landed them. He landed them on Friday nights. If you're going to turn around 2 weeks later and they're going to be eligible to be drafted to the other show, it's stupid. That's why I made the comment. I said, anybody who has signed with a particular brand should have 90 days draft protection. Anybody who has signed with a brand in the last 3 months should be ineligible to be drafted, but they're not doing that. So Bron Breakker could potentially go to Raw. Jade Cargill could potentially go to Raw, which I don't think she will, because then that breaks up the whole thing with her and Bianca. So it's possible that Bron and her are going to stay right where they are. I just think it's stupid for them to be eligible in the first place. But those are the rules of the draft. We always make such a big deal about this, and in the end, what does it really matter, right? They make up their own rules. People go back and forth. But they're billing this as the first real Paul Levesque draft. Even though I would say last year was, but like, it's a new era now, right? So this is the first Paul Levesque draft. And I'm looking for a more sports-like presentation. But more importantly, I'm looking for them to actually stick to their own rules. And if you want a draft and you want to have a brand separation, then treat it like a brand separation. That's what I'm looking for. Otherwise, it's going to be like every other draft, and none of this shit really matters. So what's the point? But draft night one is coming up on Friday. That is where I will be with you live Friday night after SmackDown. We'll go through all the draft picks and preview Monday as well. So I expect to see you back here with me on Friday night. Let's end the week strong. You guys killed it tonight. I thank you for that. And I will see you on Friday night for more Sound Off right here on YouTube. Be sure to hit that like button on your way out. And we'll do it all over again for SmackDown. Until then, you know what? After looking at that, I got some more super chats. But I was going to say, after looking at that Sting photo, I actually have a hankering for some cherry pie now. Kentucky Dried Chicken. Willow versus Ivory. Stokely and the Goodfather on commentary. And Solo Monster as the ring announcer. I dig it. Adam Casper with the $8. Hey, Adam, thank you. AEW Dynamite was weird, but can't wait to see how night one of the draft goes on Friday evening. And Barry MK, a graphic said that NXT stars are eligible. No, I understand that. I know NXT stars are eligible. I'm talking about the champions. The champions are draft protected, but they did not specify if the NXT champions are protected as well. I assume they must be, because that's probably why Ilya Dragunov lost his belt when he did. He's no longer the NXT champion. That clears the way for him to be drafted to Raw or SmackDown. Trick Williams is not going to be drafted. Trick Williams does not belong on the main roster right now. Carmelo Hayes dies. Trick Williams is going to be the face of NXT. But again, that's what I was referring to. They did not specify the status of the champions in NXT. So that's what I was talking about. I missed earlier super chats. Which ones? Tell me which one. I think, no cap, I think I mentioned you, brother. Did I miss you? I'll go back and see. I want to make sure I don't miss you. There it is. You're right. Solo, are you a Knicks fan, a Jets fan, or a Giants fan? I'm not really I'm not a big basketball guy. Football, I'm Jets. You know, my brother is Giants, I'm Jets. So for me, it's like Mets and Jets and all the rest. That kind of thing. So you can see my torment over all these many years as a Mets fan and a Jets guy. I don't really have a whole lot to celebrate. So there you go. Not a big hockey guy, not a big NBA guy. You know what I am? I'm a wrestling guy. That's what I am. Woody Allen's right-hand man, back again. One of my favorite wrestling storylines was Undertaker's streak. Do you think it should have ended? And if so, by whom? I do not think it should have ended. I have commented on that before. But if it was going to end, I still like the idea that I pitched, that it should have been the Shield. It should have been the Shield. It should have been a gauntlet match. Undertaker should have gone through Rollins and then Ambrose. And then in the end, he falls to Roman Reigns. And that's what I would have done. But if it were up to me completely, I would have kept the streak intact. And Kentucky says, Goodfellas, Face Off, Pulp Fiction, and Die Hard. Delete one of these four movies. Face Off goes bye-bye. That's pretty easy. And I like all of those movies that you just mentioned. They're all great fucking movies. Like, Goodfellas is amazing. Pulp Fiction is fantastic. I'm a Die Hard guy, so I love the original Die Hard. And Face Off was really good too, but Face Off can't hold a candle to those other three movies. So, yeah, Face Off can fuck off. Hey, Muhammad, have a good night, man. The Winston Slip says, "What does a walk-off home run mean? You rock, Solo. It means the game ends on a walk. Okay, so when you hit a walk-off home run, the game is over." It's a game-winning home run. So, pretty simple. I wish the Mets had more of those. If the Mets had more of those, I'd be a happy man. Yeah, shout out to Bruce Willis. That's a rough thing that he's going through right now. It's very sad to see. But he's still with us. He's still with us. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? You already know the answer to that. The answer is yes, of course. Absolutely. All right. I'll see you guys on Friday night. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you for all the love. And bring more questions, because I'm going to be back here with you in 48 hours. Until then, take care, guys.